All right, staff, it's 9 o'clock. We're going to call the roll, please. Can I ask the audience to please quiet down?
Commissioner Blank.
Here.
Commissioner Bloom.
Here.
Commissioner Mercurimi.
Present.
Commissioner Schellenberger.
Here.
Commissioner Stone.
Here.
Chair Wan.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. Before we go to public comment, I'm going to have Commissioner Stone is going to give us an update on the situation with the tsunami here in Santa Cruz. But even before that, I have to tell you, we have close to 30 public comment speaker slips. The first half hour is devoted to public comment. I've taken them basically in the order in which they've come. I also need to, and so only the first 10 will be called, and the rest will wait until before lunch. But I have to tell you, we are going to lose a quorum and not be able to conduct business by about noon. And so I'm asking, if you've spoken on your issue before, please don't do it again today. We just can't afford to have that and to take the risk that the issues that are on for a vote will be approved as a matter of law because we can't get to them. So, Commissioner Stone.
Thank you. Just to be brief, the county's Emergency Operations Center was staffed about 5:30 this morning when they heard about the earthquake in Japan, and unfortunately there was a lot of loss of life and some damage in Japan. There was an expectation of a tsunami coming to the coast of California. They issued the warning for some evacuations because it was predicted to be just slightly over a meter in height, and a meter in height is the standard that they use for issuing a warning. So low-lying areas in the county, there was a reverse 911 that went out to ask people to evacuate. Some of that has been done. Unfortunately, it has been reported sort of broadly and a little more broadly than was intended. In fact, the town of Pajaro, which is well outside of any potential inundation area, it was warned that they might be flooded, which is not going to be the case today. There has been some evidence of a couple of tsunami waves coming through, and they could come through potentially for the next 8 to 10 hours, but they're not quite sure where the real problem or when the real problem is going to be. So there are some roads in the low-lying areas that are closed, and there's been some evacuation notice in the lowest areas. Evidently, there was a floating dock in the harbor area that broke free and has been floating around, causing a little bit of damage. There are some issues with some boats on top of each other, or at least, you know, bumping up against each other in the harbor, but nothing more than that I have heard. I have not heard of any inundation of any land areas. Fortunately, it's low tide right now, so that also certainly helps. But even a 1 meter increase can be pretty significant. I'm just looking at a live picture which shows that that's the dredge. Yeah, potentially the dredge in the harbor has been moving. I don't know that it's broken loose, but it's been moving because it had been doing its work in the harbor recently. But from what I've heard so far, there's no inundation of any land areas. That's kind of what we know. If I get an update later on during the meeting, I'd be happy to continue that update. But it shouldn't be, looks like it's not that significant of an issue at this point.
Yes, and Madam Chair, your geologist, Dr. Johnson, was notified middle of the night when the earthquake actually hit, or shortly after, and has been monitoring the situation with all the input he's getting up and down the coast. He's on the Pacifica Pier right now. He said that the surge there was, at least the rise along the pier was about 10 feet. That doesn't mean that's the surge on the shore, but there was no noticeable damage there. And, you know, areas like Crescent City and the Crescent areas where water gets funneled in, those could be looking at greater damage, but we haven't had any reports. And if I hear of any, get any updates before the end of the meeting, I'll let you know.
Thank you. Yes.
Chair.
Commissioner
Blumer? I'll just add that I've been in touch with emergency personnel in Santa Monica, and the situation is similar, although less severe. We've been expecting a two-foot level rise in the waves. It is low tide. It was scheduled to begin at approximately 8:30, 8:40 a.m. this morning.
One last comment. I think that, the commission knows that we've been involved in the tsunami planning, tsunami warning and evacuation planning that's been taking place up and down the coast, incorporating those changes into land use plans to the extent they need to be. It appears to me, at least from what I'm hearing, that the systems in place were working. The sirens went off. People were alerted to move to higher ground. I think the preparedness here was really good foresight. We had about 9 hours of warning on this, so that system. We'll get your report next meeting, but everything I hear is that those systems worked well.
All right. Thank you. Would you, staff, go over the changes to the agenda today, please?
Good morning, commissioners. There are two changes on the agenda. On page 12, item 7A is postponed. And on page 14, item 12A is withdrawn. That includes the changes.
Thank you.
Anybody who wishes to address the commission, please fill out a speaker slip back of the room. Be aware of what the chair said about the potential of losing a quorum here today. So if you can consolidate your testimony with others, that would be very helpful so that we save time and don't lose a quorum for action by the commission. Also, if you have cell phones, please turn them off or put them on silent mode. And with that, Madam Chair, we're ready to go.
Thank you. I have 10 public comment speaker slips. I took them in the order in which I received them. So I will call the first 10, and the rest will have to wait until the end of the meeting. Pete Kanan, you have 3 minutes. And when you come up, state your name for the record. I'm also going to call the following speakers so that you can come up and sit in the chair and move up to the speaker platform as quickly as possible. And we'd appreciate brevity. Thank you. The next speaker will be David Terrazas.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Piet Cannon. I am with Ecology Action. Ecology Action is a local environmental nonprofit. Has been doing work in Santa Cruz since 1970, so over 40 years of environmental work in Santa Cruz. And I'd like to briefly just speak to you in support of the City of Santa Cruz's application and master plan for Arana Gulch. Ecology Action supports this plan because with Interpretive Trail. The Interpretive Trail will enhance the enjoyment, appreciation, and understanding of the natural resources of Arana Gulch for local citizens and citizens throughout California. The Gulch Trail will allow also increased access to the coastal area. So I beseech you, when this item comes before you in the near future, to support it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. David Terrazas, followed by Aldo Giancano.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is David Terrazas. I'm on the Santa Cruz City Council. I'd also like to acknowledge Mayor Ryan Coonerty and Vice Mayor Don Lane, who are also here in support of the Arana Gulch Master Plan, as well as the La Bahia project that's not before you today. I want to talk a little bit about myself personally as a resident, a longtime resident of Santa Cruz, and a parent. It's important to me to have access to our community, environmental community and trails. The Arana Gulch Master Plan provides an opportunity for not only residents to visit parts of the community that are currently inaccessible, but also opens up to disabled residents who are unable to get to some trails that exist now, young children through student trips, as well as the general public who are kind of excluded from some parts of our community. The plan also provides protection of habitat by allowing residents on a dedicated trail. You're providing some protections that currently don't exist now. Without your support of the Ronald Gulch Master Plan, we're unable to fund critical environmental improvements in this area, and I would appreciate your consideration that you support this measure. Furthermore, our city council remains open to meet with you individually, as well as a group, to talk about the importance of these projects to our community. So I'd like to leave you with that, to show that there is unqualified community support for these projects, and we'd like to make sure that you have the opportunity to speak with us here to talk about their importance to our community. Thank you.
Thank you. Aldo Giacchino, followed by Gene Brocklebank.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Aldo Giacchino. I'm here speaking for the local group of the Sierra Club. I am the immediate past chair of that group, and the present chair was not able to come this morning, so he asked me to represent him and the group, a 3,500-member organization that is serving Santa Cruz County. Contrary to what has been said just a moment ago, there is a great deal of opposition to the Arana Gulch Trail. For various reasons, and the Sierra Club has been opposed to this project for at least 15 years because it has some fundamental flaws. It is damaging to the environment of the nature preserve through which it would run. It is a transportation project intended to facilitate the movement of bicycles from one part of the county to the other. And as a transportation project, it is not dependent on coastal resources. Furthermore, there has been a substantial change in the complexion of this whole project since you last heard it, and that is that a very viable alternative has become available, and that is the construction of a bicycle pedestrian trail along the railroad right-of-way that passes by Arana Gulch, within 500 feet of Arana Gulch. This railroad trail has been a project for many years, but very recently, thanks to the work of very committed public servants, some of whom are here today, including Commissioner Stone, this project has gotten funding from the California Department of Transportation. Multiple millions of dollars, which will enable the acquisition of the trail and eventually the construction of a bike pedestrian path along its entire 30-mile length. This is a major alternative to the Arana Gulch proposal, and this alternative, now that it has become a reality, needs to be studied and evaluated considerably. And the next time you take up this project, and you have the, I hope you will do it in the Santa Cruz area, we hope that we can show you physically the advantages of this very real alternative. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Gene Brocklebank, followed by Michael Lewis.
Good morning, commissioners. I want to dispel immediately two myths. Myth number one, that Broadway-Bromer Transportation Project through critical habitat in an environmentally sensitive habitat area of the coastal zone is going to provide any funding for tar plant management. Tar plant management has been ongoing since 1995. The Department of Parks and Recreation manages this program. Last fall, after the commission hearing heard about Arana Gulch, the management treatments began, mowing, scraping, and raking in preparation for spring. I have received the plans by email from the Departments of Parks and Recreation that their spring plans are ongoing and ready, and we know what they're going to be. Tar plant management restoration is not tied, the funding, there is no money in Broadway-Bromer for tar plant management. That's number one myth. The second myth is that this somehow or other is a, Michael, could you is a path. It is a 12-foot, keep going, 12-foot wide destruction, paved trail for bicycle use. It's a connection from one street to another, and it's always been 12-foot wide. 2 foot here is gravel, 2 foot there is gravel, the rest of it is paving. But the most important, and I want you to remember that, please come up and do this again, because as this passes over the riparian zone outside of the greenbelt boundary and on the riparian zone of Aranac Creek on Port District property, its footprint is going to expand to 15 feet. Please look at that. Every bit of that, as it passes through Aranac Gulch greenbelt, is critical habitat that will be destroyed and developed. 98% of the California coastal terrace prairie grassland is gone now. There's a remnant of up in Aranac Gulch. Do we really want to pave that? I'm just concerned that you're not seeing the full project, because you've never seen the second half of this project. You've only seen the part of the project within the Aranac Gulch greenbelt. That's only one half of the project. The other half of the project, which you have never seen, and I'm afraid you're not going to see the next time it comes before you, is still in the coastal zone, but has never been presented to these commissioners. I'm hoping that we will be able to do that somehow or other, to get that information to you the next time this is before you. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm gonna ask you to hold the applause. Don't applaud, don't boo. That's, we just don't do that. Michael Lewis, followed by Debbie Bulger.
My name is Michael Lewis. I am a daily bicycle commuter, have been so for over 40 years, and I'm also a member of the Sierra Club. Ladies and gentlemen, destruction of habitat is not protection of habitat. The proposed Broadway-Bromer bicycle connection project in the Aranac Gulch Master Plan destroys habitat, as you've seen and heard. The new news now, the good news, is that with the purchase of the railway right away, the Broadway-Bromer bicycle connection project has now become redundant. There's no need to build yet another project. The rail trail provides over 30 miles of segregated alternative transportation between the city and the county that does not impact endangered species. The rail right away was built long before the Coastal Act was passed, and its improvement to include a rail trail will not affect any endangered species in the area. Friends of Aranac Gulch has repeatedly asked the city to remove the Broadway-Bromer Bicycle Connection Project from the Aranac Gulch Master Plan and return the Master Plan to the Coastal Commission, where it will undoubtedly receive unanimous approval. Friends of Aranac Gulch also appeals to People Power and other environmental organizations in the area to join with us in support of the rail trail as an alternative transportation project that does not impact the sensitive species in our area and provides and meets all the goals, the transportation goals of the proposed Broadway-Bromer bicycle transportation project. The rail trail is supported locally, regionally, and nationally by environmental groups. It's a project that we can all get together and bring before you once again for, again, unanimous approval. Thank you.
Debbie Bulger, followed by Richard Stover.
Today I am representing the Santa Cruz chapter.
State your name, please.
Oh, Debbie Bulger. Thank you. Santa Cruz chapter of the California Native Plant Society. When this issue came, Aranac Gulch, when this issue came before the Coastal Commission previously, you directed city staff to work with groups such as CNPS, and CNPS specifically, on alternatives to the very destructive project as it's currently designed, which bisects this habitat. CNPS has proposed an alternative, but the city has been dragging its feet. They asked for a waiver last year and wanted to bring this, or said they wanted to bring this back to the commission. This would be for the third time for consideration, and the city did not act on this waiver. And finally, it's only this week now that the city has called our president and asked to have a meeting to discuss this issue. CNPS, as you know, has proposed an alternative which goes around the periphery of the critical habitat and is looking forward to working with the city on a better plan that does not bisect the habitat and destroy this endangered plant. Thank you.
Richard Stover, followed by Lynn Gallagher.
Good morning. My name is Richard Stover. To help you on the time, I will be very brief. I'd first just like to thank the commission for upholding the Coastal Act so far. As a biker in Santa Cruz for 30 years, I am opposed to the Broadway-Bromer bicycle path through Arana Gulch. We don't need that path. There are many alternatives. It's time to approve the master plan with the elimination of that bike path. We can proceed with the restoration of the tar plant, which is what something we can all agree on. So thank you for upholding the Coastal Act. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Lynn Gallagher, followed by Peggy Waters.
I am Lynn Gallagher, and prior to my life in a wheelchair, I've been advocate for nature, and at this point of my life, I'm very sad to say I cannot access very many natural resources in my life. The Arana Gulch Master Plan has a three-part focus. As an environmentalist living in a wheelchair, I see the plan for ADA accessible nature trail as an opportunity to improve the quality of mine and many of my neighbors' lives. On behalf of the seniors, as well as neighborhood of people in wheelchairs, canes, and walkers, it is a long-standing dream to feel the open space of Arana Gulch. Peter Halen from the Commission on Disabilities has attested to the great need in this community, as well as many other leaders of disability rights. Of our four greenbelt parks in our city of Santa Cruz, this will be the first long-awaited ADA accessible trail on public land available to many people like me. Many of us are overjoyed at this prospect. I personally am a dedicated environmentalist who is inspired by the vast number of our citizens who support alternative transportation. Many are taking the initiative to put on their helmets and hang up their car keys. The economics of gasoline is yet another incentive to look more seriously at alternative transportation options. As a progressive community, we are involved in major environmental issues in our city. Action must be taken to address reduction of greenhouse gas emissions, addressing climate destabilization must also be top priority in our municipality, also the rest of our world. A majority of all greenhouse emissions in our county are from one sector of our economy.
You're going to have to wind up. Your 3 minutes are up.
It is a growing trend in our cities and small towns across the nation to prioritize more bike trails, as well as providing nature opportunities for those with limited mobility and access.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Peggy Waters, followed by Vince Cheap.
Good morning. I'm Peggy Waters. I'm also from the California Native Plant Society. I'm not going to repeat what people have said. I'm against the bike path bisecting the habitat. It's too wide. The idea that you can pave 12 feet across a sensitive habitat to save the plant is, it's out of Saturday Night Live.
Vince Cheat.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Vince Cheap, and I'm a member of the California Native Plant Society, their conservation chair. I wanted to speak again and remind the commission and the public that this particular population of Santa Cruz sunflower or tar plant is not only endangered and listed by both the federal and the state, but it is also genetically unique among the other 12 known populations in the whole world. So for any kind of recovery in the long run, you need the maximum amount of genetic diversity. Furthermore, the CNPS has been offering a route that goes around the periphery that does not fragment and bisect the population, and that is an ADA compliant. And it's the same standards. So people actually get better views from the route we have brought up, because you get to see over the harbor and you're in the periphery instead of the middle. I would also like to reiterate that there are big holes missing in the analysis of this project. Those have to do with, the city has never really incorporated any of the correct experts who really need to comment on whether this kind of reserve for an endangered species will really last, be affordable over time and work. Those correct experts are grassland managers who are experienced with long-term management, conservation biologists familiar with reserve design principles. Neither group has been asked to formally input. An ad hoc survey of grassland managers, and this is from our consultant who is an expert in this particular species, notes that none would willingly opt for bisected habitat perimeter impact, for a bisected habitat. In other words, you have all these extra edge effects when you split it. Our plan makes this one entire area of roughly 13, 14 acres. The city's plan has it in three different fenced areas. Every fence line provides a different kind of threat from weeds. You can't control weeds in there. The gravel areas provide a habitat for certain kind of weedy species to invade. And to have that S-ing through the middle, or in a big U, if you will, is really destructive. So we hope the city will be truthful and really and honest and try to find an approach that gives them not only what they're looking for in terms of a corridor, but also really protects the species for long-term survival and recovery, which is what is required by the Endangered Species Act. And I appreciate your time and consideration.
Thank you. That concludes the first 10 speakers. I have an additional 19 speaker slips that we will take up later in the morning.
I apologize for interrupting, but I was number 5 signing up at 8:30.
No, we don't have a number sheet. You have no idea. Excuse me, let's not get into an argument. When I get my speaker slips from there, they come in from lots of different people. I took what I had in the order in which I had it. Okay, I didn't. There are members of the city council who are on the second batch. Okay. That's just what we have to face. Okay, let's go to the.
Thank you.
Good morning, Commissioners. That brings us to the North Central Coast District. And item four is the Deputy Director's report. And in that report, we have one regular waiver, an emergency permit, and an immaterial amendment to report to you. And as long as there are no questions or objections, we'll move on to item 6A, which is a local coastal program amendment in Half Moon Bay. And Renee Ananda of our planning staff will present that recommendation to you. And we have about a four-minute presentation.
If there's somebody here who wants to speak on this, I don't have a speaker slip for them, so let's make it quick. Thanks.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Which, for 6A? I have none. 6.5.
Item 6A is a proposed LCP amendment for the city of Half Moon Bay that would change the land use plan and zoning designations from residential to commercial for a portion of a currently developed property. The subject property is owned by Irmandade do Divino Espírito Santo, IDES, a Portuguese cultural organization and society. It is located at 745 Main Street in downtown Half Moon Bay, San Mateo County. The 0.86-acre site is developed with three one-story structures and parking lot. It is used for various community events. The property is currently split zoned between residential and commercial zoning designations. The purpose of this proposed amendment is to establish a uniform commercial land use designation and corresponding zoning for the entire parcel so that the current use of the site as a cultural society facility would conform to the standards for the commercial general land use and commercial downtown zoning designations. The subject site is located on the border of the commercial and residential area in downtown Half Moon Bay. North and west of the site are commercial developments, including small businesses that have been established in converted historic houses, and a municipal water district office is also located within the area of the subject site. Single-family residences are located to the east of the site. Staff believes that the proposed amendment is consistent with the Coastal Act and recommends that the Commission approve it as submitted. The property is located east of Highway 1 within a developed urban area with adequate public services. A commercial land use and zoning designation at the site would not result in impacts on coastal area access points, wetlands, or riparian habitat, and the site is not susceptible to bluff retreat or landslides. Therefore, staff believes that the proposed amendment is consistent with Chapter 3 of the Coastal Act, specifically sections regarding public access, ESHA, scenic and visual qualities, development and hazards. In conclusion, staff recommends that the Commission certify the proposed changes to the land use plan and implementation plan, which comprise the LCP amendment as submitted, and the recommended motions and resolutions which can be found in the staff report starting on page 2. This concludes staff's presentation, and we are available for questions.
Thank you. Any ex parte communications? Seeing none, I don't have any speaker slips. So can I get a motion?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Commissioner Stone.
I move that the Commission certify land use plan amendment number HMB-MAJ-2-10-A as submitted by the City of Half Moon Bay and recommend a yes vote.
Do I have a second?
Sir.
Moved by Commissioner Stone, seconded by Commissioner Allgood. They're recommending a yes vote, which will result in the certification of the land use plan amendment as submitted. Any objection to a unanimous roll call? Seeing none, the land use plan amendment has been approved. Motion 2.
I'm sorry. I move that the commission reject implementation plan amendment number HMB-MAJ-2-10-A by the City of Half Moon Bay as submitted and recommend a no vote.
I have a motion. Second? Motion by Commissioner Stone, seconded by Commissioner Allgood, recommending a no vote, which would result in the certification of the implementation plan amendment as submitted. You want to talk to your motion?
No, thank you. I think staff got it right on this one.
Any objection to a unanimous roll call?
I was going to say, shocking.
Seeing none, the commission has certified the implementation plan amendment as submitted. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
I think he meant it.
That brings us to 6.5A, which is an appeal in the Fitzgerald Marine Reserve. And Roxana Farshi is an intern that's been working with us for the past several months. We're really happy to have her, and she's going to be doing the staff recommendation on this item.
Madam Chair, before Roxana begins, do you have any speaker slips on this?
I have four speaker slips.
Okay.
I do need to find out who has standing, since this is this a substantial issue?
Yes.
Yeah. Sabrina Brennan, I know, has standing.
Okay. All right.
Leonard Warren? I don't know. Catherine Slater Carter? I don't see. Do you have standing? Okay, that's fine. I'm just making sure. All right, thank you. If there's a question, you need to go up and resolve that with staff while staff is making its presentation.
Good morning, Chair Wan and Commissioners. This item is an appeal by Sabrina Brennan of a San Mateo County approval for trail improvements at Fitzgerald Marine Reserve located in Moss Beach. This slide shows the alignment of an existing trail that currently connects North Lake Street with Cypress Avenue. This trail is the only trail connection from north to south of the reserve. If improved, the trail would ultimately serve as a piece of and connect with other segments of the California Coastal Trail that are developed or are planned in the north and south. The county approved project includes replacement of a temporary pedestrian bridge across San Vicente Creek with a prefabricated 8-foot wide, 60-foot long fiberglass clear span bridge located approximately 30 feet upstream from the current temporary bridge. Slide 5 is a close up of the bridge improvements. The location of the existing bridge is highlighted in yellow on the left. Next slide. Slide 6 shows the location of the new bridge. Slide 7. The county has also approved widening and improvement of an existing 6-foot wide trail to 8 feet to allow wheelchair users to access the trail. This is an example of the present condition of the 6-foot wide unimproved trail and the proposed material for the development. The trail would be surfaced with a pervious gravel structure and include signage and interpretation of the local natural resources. The county has also indicated that there would be no developed shoulders to the trail and that native vegetation would occur along the edges of the trail. Portions of the trail would be located in potentially sensitive areas, including wetlands, riparian corridors, and native strawberry. The appellant contends that the trail would impact a wetland area along 200 lineal feet of trail that supports rushes and western sword ferns, and that the county's requirements for the applicant to remove, save, and replant the ferns or rushes is not adequate and is inconsistent with the LCP. Secondly, the appellant expresses a concern about County Parks' plans to utilize a section of the trail for maintenance vehicles and states that this use is inconsistent with LCP ESHA policies. Lastly, the appellant contends that the bridge over San Vicente Creek would impact the creek's riparian corridor and an archaeological site, and that it, as well as the trail at each end, should be reduced in size to minimize impacts to ESHA in the sensitive archaeological area. Slide 9 is an example of the ferns referred to by the appellant. Slide 10 is the location of the archaeological site. Staff recommends that the commission find that the appeal raises no substantial issue of conformance with the LCP for the following reasons. There are differences of opinion contained in the record in regards to whether the area along the disputed trail section is a wetland as defined by the LCP. Taking the conservative approach that the area in question is a wetland, San Mateo County's LCP allows nature education and research uses within wetlands. The approved trail could be categorized as nature education due to its natural setting in a reserve, the extensive informational and interpretive signage, available brochures and docent-led tours, including school tours. In addition, the project would impact a very small area in the area of potential wetlands, and the county has required replanting of impacted vegetation to offset these small impacts. Further, a staff site visit confirmed that while the trail could be less wide in the vicinity of the potential wetland, realigning the trail away from the potential wetland area could require more grading into an adjacent sloped area, resulting in potentially greater impacts, including from retaining structures. In regard to the use of the trail by county maintenance vehicles, this use would help maintain the trail and surrounding vegetation, and this maintenance function would be secondary to the primary California Coastal Trail and nature education function of the trail segment. Other non-park vehicles would be prohibited from use of the trail by placement of removable bollards at the south end of the trail. Slide 12 is an example of the removable bollards, which are currently at the Cypress Avenue end of the trail. Slide 13 shows the current temporary bridge at the North Lake Street end of the trail. In regards to the proposed bridge over San Vicente Creek, LCP policies allow bridges in riparian corridors if no other alternative exists and where supports are not in significant conflict with corridor resources. In regards to the alternatives, the county found that were a new bridge proposed in the same location as the existing temporary bridge, the long-term erosion pattern on the north end side of the creek would likely threaten future bridge abutments at the location, necessitating the placement of riprap within the creek channel. Further, the size is appropriate given the multi-use of the trail. Lastly, staff believes that with the recommended mitigation, the bridge does not result in disturbance of significant corridor resources and therefore does not raise a substantial issue. In regard to the archaeological impacts contention, LCP policies allow development near archaeological sites as long as measures are taken to minimize impacts. Condition 23 of the county approval requires extensive measures to be undertaken to ensure impacts of the archaeological site are minimized, including having an archaeological monitor on site during construction. In conclusion, staff recommends that the commission find that the appeal raises no substantial issue of conformity to the approved project with policies of the San Mateo County certified LCP. That concludes staff presentation, and we are available for questions.
Party communications? All right, seeing none, I'm going to open the public hearing. I have three speaker slips who are appellants. I'm going to give the three of you 6 minutes. You're going to have to figure out how to use that 6 minutes between the three of you. I have Sabrina Brennan, Leonard Warren. Is he here? Yeah.
I'm not an appellant, but I want to.
If you're not an appellant, I'm going to remove you, unless you were at, were you at the public hearings?
I'm unclear at which public hearings. I'm on the Midwest Council.
No, that doesn't do it. Okay. So you have two, Catherine, and the second one is Catherine Slater Carter. Shall I just give you each 3 minutes?
No, give all the time to Sabrina. She has a vote.
I'll give you 4 minutes total. This is a substantial issue, and I'm sorry, but as you heard initially, we really got to cut things short.
Okay, so hi, my name is Sabrina Brennan, and I'm going to speak really fast. So let's go to the next slide. The 2002 Fitzgerald Marine Reserve Master Plan recognized the area's rich natural resources through its guiding principles. The fundamental concept underlying the Master Plan is that protection of the outstanding natural resources of the Fitzgerald Marine Reserve will require a new approach to management of ecological systems and visitors in the future. And the best way to accomplish this goal is to emphasize the sensitivity of the resource to enhance the educational values of the reserve, to manage visitation, and to limit the use of the reserve as a recreational destination. The trail is a quarter mile. There are roads at either end of the trail. There is also a secondary strand of the coastal trail through the Fitzgerald Marine Reserve. So the information you got earlier was not correct. There are two strands of the coastal trail within the reserve. This is only one of two strands. The commission's staff biologist has reviewed the WRA report and concluded that the area in question could be considered a wetland pursuant to Coastal Commission's definition of a wetland. Next slide, please. Next slide. Next slide. Okay. In fact, 50% of the herbaceous vegetation cover at one of the sample locations was provided by species-designated obligate and facultative wetlands. Sorry, I'm not familiar with those words. Indicating they most commonly occur in wetlands. Next slide. Next slide. Thanks. In comparison, the WRA report concludes that although there are wetland species, next slide please, present in the area, it is not a wetland due to upland conditions observed. However, the observation done in the report were conducted in August, and the conclusion that the area did not pond water during the rainy season was an anecdotal recollection by a park ranger. In addition, lack of inundation does not mean the area may not saturate near the surface during the rainy season. Therefore, the data collected and the analysis by the WRA environmental consultant is insufficient to enable the commission to conclude that the area is not a wetland. The actual developed trail, please, next slide. Next slide. Next slide. Okay. The actual developed trail will only be approximately 2 feet wider than the existing undeveloped trail footprint. So please note, this is not accurate information. Most of the existing trail, next slide, please. Okay, so let me reread that. This is from the staff report. The actual developed trail will be only approximately 2 feet wider than the existing undeveloped trail footprint. Please note, this is not accurate information. Most of the existing trail is 3 to 4 feet wide. The proposed width is 8 feet. Next slide. This is new information, this slide here. This was not considered by the county or by Coastal Commission staff. So I really want to kind of focus on this for a second. You can see the arrow where the Dardanelle Trail is located. The proximity of the pond to the trail was not included in the documentation and was not considered by the county and therefore not considered by the commission staff either. Next slide. Ponds and lakes are sensitive habitats and development requires a 100-foot setback. This pond is 60 feet from the Dardanelle Trail. This was not considered by the county and it was also not considered by the staff report. Next slide, please. Okay, next slide. The archaeological site, the bridge is actually going to go on top of the archaeological site, not next to the archaeological site. So I just wanted to point that out. And I'm not going to get to the rest of my slides, but you have a printout of all of my information here. So if you have a chance, if you could leaf through, I'd really appreciate it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Sam Hertzberg, you have 4 minutes.
Good morning, Commissioners. 1997-98, there was a small bridge that was put. Sam Hertzberg, I'm the senior planner with San Mateo County Parks and Recreation Division. In 1997-98, there was a small footbridge, several hundred feet downstream, that was climbed up on a steep embankment up to the bluff top, and that was the California Coastal Trail. Subsequently, people started using the site where the currently proposed bridge is with a piece of wood as an alternate access, and the county put in a temporary bridge as a chimney culvert washed out, sediment washed out, and the creek has established its natural channel. In 2002, the county had done a master plan for the Fitzgerald Marine Reserve that recommended where the coastal trail should go on the eastern periphery of the reserve so as not to impact the beach, the bluff, and to be a multi-use trail that's ADA accessible so that people could get safely from Cypress to North Lake Street. Right now, the only other way to get between these two streets is within the Highway 1 right-of-way. Our county trail plan standards are 10 to 12 foot paved for a multi-use trail with 2 foot gravelled shoulders We recommended 10-foot paved with 2-foot gravel shoulders to meet our multi-use standards. We had a series of public meetings, field workshop. There was a neg deck prepared, and we agreed to extend the comment period to 45 days. It was reviewed by the Midcoast Park and Recreation Action Plan Committee 3 times, the 60, 90, and 100% draft plans, our Park and Rec Commission, and the Planning Commission. Through the design process and through the feedback that we received from the public, we shrank the size of the trail in width to 8 feet, and we're trying to use a pervious surface that's never been used in San Mateo County in any open space called gravel pave. So the width of the trail, instead of 14 feet, including the shoulders, is actually 8 feet. At the Planning Commission meeting, the Committee for Green Foothills, environmental organization, requested an additional 27 conditions because of the environmental sensitivity of the site. We agreed to all of those conditions. The Commission on Disabilities, we work very closely with them over the last 3 years. They're okay with the 8 feet. But they would not want us to go any narrower than that. We agreed to the 8 feet because it also recognizes the sensitivity of this site. The wetlands that were cited before were considered in the hydrological reports prepared by our contractor, WRA. And we're actually cutting the trail into the hillside slightly to achieve the 5% ADA grade that's necessary and be away from the wetland. And so we're taking the necessary precautions to do that. I believe you've received a copy of the letter from President of our Board of Supervisors, Carol Groom, co-signed by Susie Castoria from the Commission on ADA. We've worked closely with the Commission from Commission on Disabilities. Just let you know, in terms of the width of the trail, we do need to maintain the trail. We don't plan on driving over the 8-foot bridge. We plan on making this a multi-use trail for everybody to be able to use the California Coastal Trail. I'd be glad to answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you. With that, I'll close the public testimony and return to staff. Do you have any additional comments?
Thank you. Just a couple. In regards to the trail, we believe this will provide an important future connection to the coastal trail and will provide access to multiple users. And while, you know, there are resource issues and it may not be perfect, we didn't believe that it raised a substantial issue at this time to warrant future de novo review. Also, in regards to the wetland, staff is not disputing that it may be a wetland in that particular 200-foot section. What we are saying is that, according to the LCP, nature education is allowed in wetlands at times, and we felt that that did justify it. What else? In regards to the reference to the staff report on the width of the trail, we just want to point out that in the area, the 200-foot area where the appeal was focused, the trail is about 4 to 5 feet wide, so this would increase about 3 feet. And I think that's all I had, unless any other staff has any comments.
Thank you. Commissioners, any comments? If you want to make a motion, and then
I do have a comment.
Commissioner Stanton?
I'll make the motion. I move that the Commission determine and resolve that appeal number A-2-SMC-11-010 does not present a substantial issue with respect to the grounds on which the appeal has been filed under the Coastal Act Section 30603 regarding consistency with the certified local coastal program, and I'm asking for a yes vote.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Stone, second by Commissioner Blank. Would you like to speak to your motion?
Just briefly, when we see substantial issues, it's not always that high of a hurdle to get over, and I think we have to be cautious when we do say that there is no substantial issue, especially in sensitive areas and places like this. I think in this case, though, staff did get it right. The county went a long way to protecting the sensitive habitat, the nature of this trail, and because it's an important segment of the California Coastal Trail as well, I think it's a worthy project, and I appreciate staff's analysis of it.
Commissioner Blank?
No.
Commissioner Schellenberger, did you want to say something?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I have some questions for staff. I think I must have misheard or didn't understand. You were saying that the buffer, 100-foot buffer from the sensitive habitat isn't necessary because of education. This trail is being used for education purposes?
Well, actually, their portion of the trail would go through a wetland, if you take the conservative approach. And the LCP does allow, in certain cases, nature education in wetlands if mitigation is employed and it's the least environmentally damaging.
And what is the educational element of this trail?
The trail is currently being used for docent-led tours, school tours, and part of the reserve includes tide pools. And many of the elementary schools and middle schools in the area go out there for regular school trips.
Oh, okay, sorry, I missed that. And then the other question is about the archaeological site. We heard that the end of the bridge was actually being placed on that site. Is that accurate?
It's being placed near that site or next to that site, and it's going to be protected with a fill cap and a lot of other. There's a special condition at the end of the county's approval, condition 23, that requires extensive measures to avoid the archaeological site, including having very thin pilings to avoid the disturbance area. And having an archaeological monitor on site that would observe the site during construction and would have authority to halt construction if necessary, if anything is uncovered.
And so they have been working with the Native American up there?
They're nodding their heads, yes. Yes.
Okay. all right. I have to say this one makes me uncomfortable. So I'm not quite sure how I'm going to vote, but I do think it's a close call whether there's a substantial issue. And I guess having said that, I'm going to be a yes, there is substantial issue vote.
Just a quick comment. I am also uncomfortable. I'm going to read something directly out of the staff report, and this all relates to the fact that when the county did the wetlands delineation, they basically said there was no wetland when there probably is a wetland there. And I think that that may be the reason. It says, a specific alternatives analysis of trail alignments that would avoid the potential wetland area was not developed by the applicant for the trail location, nor was any alternatives analysis discussed by the county in its findings. This comes directly from the staff report. That's what makes me uncomfortable. Yes, there may be times when it is necessary for the trail to go through the wetland for these purposes, but if you haven't done a full-blown alternatives analysis, which you should do, then we can't make the determination that there isn't a way to do this without going through the wetland or without impacting it to the extent that you are. You may be even eventually impacted, but maybe not quite as much. And it's that lack of alternatives analysis that, from my perspective, raises this to substantial issue, because it's something that could be dealt with. If we find substantial issue, we take it in, and then they have to provide the alternatives analysis, then we would get to look at that and make that determination. I'm also, from the staff report, and I don't know if there's more than that, the mitigation for the impact to this wetland is, what I could tell, is simply to take the plants and the ferns and the plants and replant them. But if there's an impact to a wetland, we normally require more mitigation than that. And we're not requiring the mitigation in, I would assume, because they determined there was no wetland there. So these two things, from my perspective, cause me to be concerned to say that I believe this is a substantial issue. Any other commissioners? Okay, do we want to have a roll call vote? The maker of the did you want to say?
No, I was fine.
Go ahead.
If we can get that motion repeated.
I was about to do that. The maker of the motion is recommending a yes vote, which would result in the finding of no substantial issue. So if you want to find no substantial issue, it's yes. If you want to find substantial issue, your vote is no. Any questions? Would you call the roll, please?
Commissioner Allgood?
No.
Allgood, no. Commissioner Blank?
Yes.
Blank, yes. Commissioner Bloom?
Yes.
Bloom, yes. Commissioner Mercurimi?
No.
Mercurimi, no. Commissioner Mitchell?
Yes.
Mitchell, yes. Commissioner Schellenberger?
No.
Schellenberger, no. Commissioner Stone?
Yes.
Stone, yes. Commissioner Wan, Chair Wan?
No.
No. The vote is 4-4.
And what does that mean?
You failed to find no substantial issues, so the matter will be set for subsequent hearing.
All right, thank you. And I just a quick comment. I think it's that alternatives analysis that's really needed, and that doesn't mean that there isn't a trail, and it probably should be very similar to this. It's a question of how you avoid or how much of the wetlands you can avoid, okay?
Thanks, that's helpful direction and for us when we go back and work with the applicant on for the future de novo. Thank you.
Okay, let's move on. I saw the gentleman from the county. Would you talk to our staff? Okay.
So that'll bring us to the Central Coast portion of today's agenda. We'll start on item number 8. There aren't any consent calendar items for Central Coast District, so that takes us to the LCP amendments. The first LCP amendment is item number 9A. This is a City of Capitola LCP amendment request to modify some of the standards related to commercial regulations in the coastal zone. At this point, we're not recommending that the Commission take final action on the substantive issues with the LCP amendment. Rather, we're recommending that the Commission extend the time period within which to act on the amendment to allow us a little more time to work on it, as well as to work with the city on potential modifications. So the motion to extend the time is found on page 2, and that concludes staff's presentation.
Can I get a motion?
Madam Chair, I move that the Commission extend the 60-day time limit to act on the City of Capitola Local Coastal Program Amendment Number 1-10, Part 1, to March 11, 2012. And I'm asking for a yes vote.
Moved by Commissioner Stone, seconded by Commissioner Mercurimi. Any objection to a unanimous roll call? Seeing none, the Commission has approved the time extension.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That returns us to item 9B. This is another LCP amendment, this one by Santa Cruz County. And this is a proposal to add emergency homeless shelters as a principally permitted use in the public facility zoning district. This zoning district in the county is primarily applied to parcels that are already developed with public facilities, such as hospitals, churches, schools, libraries, fire stations, and that sort of thing. These are primarily in the urban areas of the county. And the county's proposal here is in response to Senate Bill 2. It requires cities and counties to identify at least one district within which emergency homeless shelters are allowed as a principally permitted use. I know there's a number of coastal jurisdictions that are pursuing this at this time, so this is something you're gonna see more of. In this case, the amendment provides site standards specific to emergency homeless shelters, and staff believes that those standards, in tandem with the LCP standards that would apply to any coastal resource issues that would come up, would be adequate to address issues should they arise in the future. We're recommending that the Commission approve the amendment as submitted, and the necessary motion is found on page 2 of the staff report. That concludes staff's presentation.
Yes, I have no speaker slips on this. Can I get a motion? Oh, first, I guess a call for ex parte communication. Okay. Can I get a motion, Commissioner Stone?
I move that the Commission reject Major Amendment Number 2-10, Part 2, to the Santa Cruz County Local Coastal Program Implementation Plan, as submitted by the Santa Cruz County, and I'm asking for a no vote.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Stone, seconded by Commissioner Bloom. You want to speak to your motion?
Just to say thank you. This is something that we've been working on in Santa Cruz County to try and recognize the need for homeless shelters. So I appreciate your support.
Commissioner Bloom?
No, thank you.
All right. Any objection to unanimous roll call? Seeing none, the motion fails and results in the certification of the implementation plan amendment as submitted. Okay, staff, 9C.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That'll bring us to item 9C. This is also a Santa Cruz County LCP amendment request. This one's designed to address the owner occupancy requirement for second units that are owned by public agencies and that provide for housing for special populations. Although the situation's fairly limited, the current LCP puts public agency ownership and service to these special needs populations in a catch-22. This change will allow that the public agencies aren't required to live at the site, which is something they're not able to do. And we don't believe it raises any coastal resource concerns. We're recommending that the Commission concur with the Executive Director's determination that this is a minor amendment.
I have no speaker slips. Any ex parte communications? Any objection to finding concurrence? Seeing none, the Commission has concurred.
So that'll take us to the appeal calendar. Item number 10A is an appeal of a City of Morro Bay decision authorizing the demolition of the wastewater treatment plant in the City of Morro Bay and the construction of a new wastewater treatment plant on the same site. Site's located seaward of Highway 1. Near the shoreline, near Morro Rock and Morro Creek in Morro Bay. Staff believes that the appeal raises substantial LCP conformance issues, including in terms of hazard avoidance, public viewshed protection, maximizing and optimizing public recreational access opportunities, archaeological protection, and sustainable public infrastructure requirements. Staff also believes the city's approval didn't adequately analyze the proposed project across the necessary range of feasible alternatives, including fundamentally in terms of alternative siting and design options. We're recommending that the Commission find that a substantial issue exists and take jurisdiction over the coastal permit, which would be scheduled for a future de novo hearing once the applicants provided additional supporting information. Including with respect to alternative siting and design. So unless three or more commissioners would be interested in discussing the substantial issue question, substantial issue will be deemed to have been found pursuant to the staff report analysis.
Any ex parte communications? Seeing none.
No, Chair, I have ex parte.
You do? Mm-hmm. Okay, I turned my head too quickly.
Sorry, I spoke with Sarah Dameron, Margie Kane, Graham Wiesman on March 3rd, 2011 at 1 o'clock in my office. They were speaking for the Sierra Club and the surf rider, San Luis Obispo, and their supporting staff recommendation of the finding of substantial issue. While they say that the need for the wastewater treatment plant is critical, especially to protect water quality in this area, they feel that staff's analysis is correct, that there are substantial issues with this and how the city has applied its LCP policies. I guess I'm not going to go through the list of all that. It's pretty much covered by what is in the staff recommendation, and they certainly agree with that. So, thank you.
Thank you. Any other ex partes? Are there three or more commissioners who wish to hear the question of substantial issue? Seeing none, the Commission has found substantial issue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That'll bring us to item 10B. This is another appeal. This one's an appeal of a San Luis Obispo County coastal permit decision to demolish the Main Street Bridge in Cambria and to build a replacement Main Street Bridge at the same location. I'd like to ask Central Coast Coastal Program Analyst Jonathan Bishop to give the staff recommendation.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Commissioners. Item
10B is an appeal of a San Luis Obispo County decision authorizing the County Public Works Department to replace the Main Street Bridge with a new bridge on a parallel alignment over Santa Rosa Creek in the community of Cambria. The appellant contends that the project does not meet LCP requirements for protecting and enhancing environmentally sensitive habitat areas associated with Santa Rosa Creek, the scenic and visual character of the area, and public access. In sum, the appellant contends that there are other alternative bridge alignments and designs that would better protect coastal resources. Next slide, please. The project site is located approximately 3 miles inland from the Pacific Ocean on Main Street in Cambria. This portion of Main Street is slightly out of the main downtown area and functions as the eastern entrance to the community, providing access from Highway 1 to Santa Rosa Creek Road and further on into the town of Cambria. Next slide. The proposed project would replace the existing 2-lane, 30-foot wide by 90-foot long T-girder bridge with a center pier support, replaced with a 37.5-foot wide, 150-foot long cast-in-place concrete single-span bridge without any in-creek support. In order to support the new clear-span bridge, the project includes constructing abutments at the creek bank edge and placement of riprap to protect the abutments. The project also includes realignment of Main Street upstream of the bridge, realignment of Main Street and Santa Rosa Creek intersection, as well as demolition and removal of the existing bridge after the new bridge is constructed. The former bridge location and areas surrounding the new bridge will be restored. Next slide. Slide 4 is a photo of the existing bridge looking south as one leaves the downtown village area. Next slide. Here's a photo taken from the bridge looking north, approaching Santa Rosa Creek Road intersection, and this is about a quarter of a mile from the downtown village area. Next slide. This is a view of the existing bridge deck and deck rail. The county indicates that the replacement bridge is necessary because the existing bridge does not meet traffic and safety needs. As described by the county, the existing bridge is inadequate to provide safe passage over the long term. The bridge has been designated functionally obsolete by Caltrans under the federal standards due to deck geometry and load capacity. The county has also raised concerns regarding public safety and has cited evidence of bridge rail strikes by vehicles here. Next slide. According to information provided by the county, environmental documents, and supplemental information, this project will disturb approximately 0.68 acres of stream habitat in and around the bridge. It will require that 2 oak trees and 17 willows be removed. A biological monitor is required during all construction activities, and the project will also allow for the existing abutments and supports that currently extend into the stream corridor to be removed and for this area to be restored to a more natural stream geometry and vegetation community. Specifically, the project includes various restoration components, including the removal of exotic plant species in the area, restoration of the area where the old bridge would be removed, extensive planting of natives in and around the project site. The county conditions of approval require the planting of at least 20 oak trees and 74 willows. All told, the restoration and enhancement will occur over roughly an acre. The county conditions also require that this is implemented through a habitat mitigation and monitoring plan. Although the project will have some riparian corridor impacts, it will also result in some significant benefits, particularly in relation to removing the existing support column and pulling out the large area of abutment on either side of the creek bed that currently constricts Santa Rosa Creek at this location. Next slide. County LCP does require the protection of scenic coastal areas, unique and attractive features of the landscape, scenic vistas, and sensitive habitat. The LCP also contains a specific requirement for bridge construction over creeks, requiring that the approved bridge project be the least environmentally damaging feasible alternative. The LCP contemplates and allows some level of stream habitat impacts for these types of projects. The key factor in our LCP analysis in determining the least environmentally damaging feasible alternative boils down to 2 primary issues. whether we can have a replacement bridge be located in the same alignment to potentially reduce the impacts, and what abutment methods and degree of abutment protection is necessary. Next slide. With respect to the question of alignment alternatives, information has been provided by the county demonstrating that the estimated linear stream channel and area of habitat impacts are comparable for each of the alignment alternatives considered. They looked at an upstream alignment, a downstream alignment, as well as the existing alignment. Staff has reviewed this information and believes that it fairly represents the potential impacts in each scenario, including because construction access necessarily affects a larger area than any potential final alignment in all cases. Likewise, post-construction habitat restoration measures for each scenario will generally improve the overall habitat conditions. These next few slides depict the area of impact for each of the alternatives analyzed. This slide shows the existing alignment alternative with an area of impact of 0.674 acres and a length of about 191 linear feet. Next slide. This next slide shows the area of impact for the proposed inland alignment. This is the county's proposed alignment. The area of impact here is shown to be 0.676 acres with a length of impact of about 174 linear feet. Next slide. This slide shows the two alternatives overlapping, and the county did find that the upstream alignment is the least environmentally damaging feasible alternative. Other project elements highlighted by the county in support of this alignment include avoiding road closures and traffic control during construction, as well as improved roadway geometrics and access restrictions to adjacent properties for the completed project. Commission staff looked at these alternatives, and we generally agree that this is the environmental impacts and habitat of each of the alignments are similar, and that there is not an environmentally preferable siting alternative. In this case, there does not appear any alternative alignment that reduce impacts to coastal resources in any significant or meaningful way. Next slide. The other appeal issues raised were visual and scenic resources. The appellant contends that the new bridge would not adequately protect the public viewshed and would not be consistent with the character of the area. This new bridge would be made of concrete. It does include 3-foot-tall see-through barrier rails. While it will look slightly different from the existing bridge, the bridge is best described as fairly small. It's a short span, and generally the impacts would be temporary with the vegetation removal, and that the new bridge will effectively blend into the setting over time with the extensive riparian corridor restoration and enhancements. The last issue raised was public access. The appellant contends that the county project is inconsistent with the shoreline access policies of the LCP because the county approved bridge does not adequately foster pedestrian and bicycle use. In this particular case, the county did evaluate a variety of access improvements to the bridge design. The county concluded that a 5-foot wide stripe shoulder or a class 2 bikeway was appropriate here. That reduced the width of the overall bridge using 5-foot shoulders instead of 7-foot shoulders. The commission staff did visit this site, and we concur that given the inland location of the bridge and the various site constraints, including the habitat, the steep slopes, narrow road prisms, limited sight lines, and high traffic speeds, that it is not necessary to incorporate a dedicated pedestrian access bridge or access area on this bridge in order to achieve LCP compliance. In conclusion, the county approved project has been designed in a manner that avoids coastal resource impacts as much as possible and includes appropriate restoration enhancement to offset the impacts, and there isn't a feasible bridge replacement project that would lead to significantly less resource degradation. Staff recommends that the commission find that the appeal raises no substantial issue. The motion and the resolution to implement this recommendation are found on pages 4 and 5, and that concludes staff's presentation.
Thank you. Any ex parte starting on the left? Commissioner Stone.
Thank you. I spoke with Sarah Dameron, Margie Kane, Grant Wiesman on March 3rd, 2011, about 1 o'clock in my office. They were speaking for the Santa Lucia chapter of the Sierra Club, who opposes staff recommendation to find no substantial issue. They feel there is a substantial issue. The issues that they raise are habitat, ESHA, streambed alteration. They feel it's better to leave the existing foundation and use the existing piers for the bridge. A replacement bridge can be built with minimization with as much minimalization of width as possible. The bridge does not need to be double in size. They feel the commissioner should find substantial issue because there is an alternative alignment that meets current bridge codes, better retains the aesthetics of the rural roadway, and is significantly less harmful to the riparian habitat in ESHA. They feel the project does not conform with ESHA policies 1, 2, 3, 20, 21, and 22 because the county has not contemplated the potential for disturbance of the mercury deposits at the site and for the loss of the mercury sequestration by the roots of the mature willow and cottonwood stands on both sides of the creek and the bridge. They feel an unremediated mercury mine that is located 2.5 miles upstream from the site leads to the finding of mercury, which has been found at the bridge site in samples containing creek water sediments and willow root fragments at a level of 120 parts per billion. This was identified by the Santa Rosa Creek Watershed Management Plan as a level 4 threshold effects on steelhead. Mercury has also been documented at 4 other sites downstream out of the Santa Rosa Creek Lagoon and at the beach. The equipment and construction will disturb the entire creek bed and floodplain at the site with substantial potential for mobilizing mercury by such means as bringing the now buried deposits to the surface to enter the creek water and when the diverted creek is restored to the channel and by demolishing and digging out the bridge's center pier. The pier is presently a refuge for steelhead fry because it offers a scoured pool that is shaded and oxygenated. They feel the groundwater is very close to the surface of the site and may have to be pumped out to dewater the work site, and this means that not just the surface water but groundwater may be degraded by mercury at the site. So they're very concerned about, feel that more review needs to be had. So thank you.
I had several ex partes. The first were by email, and I guess I'll read them. And it's from Frank Drouillard. He said, please oppose the staff's recommendation and find that a substantial issue exists and direct the applicant to consider a bridge alignment and construction methods that have a less significant impact on the riparian corridor and ESHA. The proposed bridge replacement is a wider than the original and is along a new alignment that incorporates a larger radius horizontal curve. The result is a new roadway that, one, requires additional right-of-way, requires destruction of riparian vegetation in ESHA, alters the rural setting of the existing roadway, and will encourage vehicles to speed faster along the road. A bridge replacement confined to the existing right-of-way is both feasible and can be built to current Caltrans standards. The replacement bridge can be built in longitudinal halves. This would require building the south half first, then moving one lane traffic onto the new bridge, demolishing the existing bridge, building the second half of the replacement bridge, and then opening the completed structure to two-way traffic. The existing pier foundation can be left in place to minimize disruptions to the creek bed. I received this on, I guess I forgot to mention that the emails came in on Friday. When all factors are considered, building a replacement bridge within the current ROW, I guess that's the current right-of-way, is the least environmentally damaging alternative, and it meets those community objectives that are consistent with the LCP. And then he quotes from the staff report, quote, in conclusion, it's clear the appeal raises some valid coastal resource questions. In the time since the matter was appealed, staff has researched bridge design standards and related issues. And his comment, why did staff conclude it wasn't feasible to build the bridge in phased construction of longitudinal halves? This is done in other parts of California to protect riparian ESHA, and it would work for this project too. Yes, it requires one lane traffic at the crossing during most of the construction, but such traffic maintenance has been used at locations with much higher average daily traffic than this crossing. One example that comes to mind is the Porter Creek Road Bridge over Porter Creek at France Valley Road in Sonoma. It is currently being replaced by Sonoma County. It is my understanding that a similar method was used in San Mateo County, where the average daily traffic was 23,000 vehicles. And then he quotes again, moreover, the project overall will result in significant restoration enhancement of this stream reach, including by moving significant abutment area out of the stream channel, eliminating the existing center bridge support in favor of a longer clear span and aggressive restorative planting throughout. And he says, and his comment is, the alternative alignment that remains within the current right-of-way accomplishes these stated goals as well, while drastically reducing impacts on the stream and riparian habitat. And then on Saturday morning at 10, I received a call from Mr. Drouillard and said that the county never really looked at the alternative of building in the same alignment. They simply claimed it wasn't feasible because of traffic issues. But Caltrans is using the method that he discussed in Sonoma and San Mateo right now. There are some things about how they're constructing this that are good, clear span and the abutment, but this can be done if the bridge is located in the current location, which would be much less impactful on the environment. And this is sort of a repeat of the other things that he said, that they're adding larger radius curves, which will increase the speed and turn this rural road into a highway, which is not consistent with the character of the area. To get that larger radius curve, they're taking out trees that they could avoid removing. And they say they meet all the objectives of the LCP, but he doesn't understand what that means since they haven't specified what those objectives are. The LCP is very specific about doing the least damaging feasible alternative. Putting the bridge in the same location is feasible, and it is the least damaging alternative. Am I right? Any other ex parties? Seeing none, I'll open the public hearing. This is a substantial issue question. I will go to the representative of the appellant first, and then to the county. You will have, Mr. Drouillard, Francis Drouillard, you will have 3 minutes.
All right, can you queue up? Next slide. Go to the next slide, please. The next one. Okay, right there. That's the alignment I want to talk about. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Frank Drouillard, and I design bridges for a living. Commissioner Juan covered a lot of the items that I won't repeat them today, but since speaking with her in ex parte, I've reviewed the staff report more fully and find there are a few other things they can do to make this bridge more feasible along the existing alignment. The first thing is to make the structure depth shallower. It's right now it's 8'8", but for this particular span, they can go as shallow as 6'9". That would allow them to lower the profile more, and that would decrease the length of impact of this project. Another thing they can do is to build the roadway approaches between retaining walls to contain the fill for those approaches. That would allow them to narrow the width of the area of impact, and with the decreased width of impact and decreased length of impact, they alleviate some of the problems that they mention about accessing the residents to the southwest of the bridge site. This, as Commissioner Juan noted, this construction method that I'm proposing has been used elsewhere in California, and more specifically at the Santa Rosa, I'm sorry, the Alpine Road Bridge over San Francisquito Creek in San Mateo County, and it's being required by Sonoma County to rebuild the Porter Creek Bridge at Franz Valley Road. I do want to note there are a couple things that they did write on this bridge, and that should be encouraged on other bridges in the coastal zone. They made it much longer than the existing bridge, and they eliminated piers in the creek, and they get the abutments out of the channel. Those are good things of this project, and we would like to see them do that along the existing alignment. Another advantage of using the retaining walls is it makes it more feasible, retaining walls along the approaches, it makes it more more feasible that they can build a new bridge along the existing alignment. One more thing that they did right on this bridge that I want to mention is they didn't make it wider than necessary. They made it only wide enough to accommodate current standards. I think that's good, and I commend them for doing that. I know you're pressed for time today, so I'm going to shorten things up. Since there's a feasible alternative that's been used elsewhere on California bridges, this project, as proposed, does not conform to the LCP, and for that reason, I ask that you find substantial issue and have them look at the feasible alternatives a little more fully. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, I'll call a representative of the applicant up. You have four speaker slips, but you're going to have a total of 3 minutes, so you can tell me who you want to speak for you or if you want more than one speaker in your 3 minutes.
Yes, Commissioner Juan, I'm Mark Hutchinson. I'm the Environmental Division Manager for the Department of Public Works. I'll be the sole speaker. The others are there only in case you have questions. I do have with me John Farhar, the Environmental Resource Specialist assigned, and Corey Marcellec, the bridge engineer who's in charge of this project.
Thank you.
So we'll try to do less than 3 minutes. We are appreciative of your staff and their assistance throughout this process in confirming that at the local level we did in fact fully evaluate two alternatives. We looked first at three. The downstream has significant issues and was eliminated early on. We did not choose the upstream alignment until the impacts on Esha were fully evaluated, and as your staff has confirmed, they are approximately equal between the two alignments. The upstream that we have chosen is slightly less just by a number of feet. The reason for that is simply that the existing bridge does have an approach, as the appellant's representative identified, that comes in from the north. It has, over the 90-year history of this bridge, been armored time and time again. And while it's a classic example of our success in vegetating riprap slopes, there's quite an extension into the stream channel. Consistent with our LCP to restore Esha when we work in that area, the bridge is some 60 feet longer and 5 feet higher. That will allow us to remove all the elements of the existing bridge, including the riprap that's been placed on the bank, and push the stream channel to the south. So we are in agreement with your staff. We believe that the proposed alignment is, although not centered on the existing road, it is centered in the Esha footprint of the existing road, including the approaches and all of the stuff that's been added to it over the years. So we, I do have a PowerPoint, which we'll defer unless we need slides to answer questions. And as I say, I am available for any questions that you may have.
Thank you. With that, I'll close the public hearing and return to staff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just quickly, we did receive the appellant's documentation a couple of days ago, and we believe that the staff report recommendation recognizes that there is a potential alternative alignment in situ, and we evaluated that and we came to essentially the same conclusion of the county, is that this would be pretty much a wash in terms of some of the issues that you might find with if you were to do a in-place, in-kind replacement, and that potentially that we're not bridge designers, obviously, but from what we know, the stitching together kind of option would lead to a longer duration of time for the bridge construction, which would lead to that sort of more temporary impacts for a longer period of time. So just in conclusion, the staff report does analyze that in situ alternative, and we do believe that the county got it right in this case.
Thank you. With that, I'll return to the commission. Commissioner Mercurini.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the staff, I think maybe it's a line call, potentially, and we need multiple referees in the room. I understand the analysis as to why you arrived that there might not be substantial issue, but I'm thinking that there just still may be, only because of that alternative that did not get the kind of review in its realignment potentially. And I realize, as you said, that not professional engineers, bridge engineers, but I'm wondering that in the repartee between the proponent and what we heard from somebody who said that they don't support our judgment, kind of leaves me on pause here. If I could, I'd like to bring up, Madam Chair, the speaker, I believe his name is Frank,
State your name for the record, please.
Hello, I'm Frank Drillard.
So, and this is just to try to tap your insights a little bit based on both what staff has just said and what the county had represented. Again, is this just so close to the line that we are that the consideration is de minimis and that there does not need to be? I'm trying to get a better handle on.
I don't buy the fact that building the bridge in the existing alignment has nearly the same impact as one that shifts the alignment 50 feet to the north. I don't agree with that evaluation. So I think the building along the existing alignment is does have less of an impact. Excuse me.
And true that the county did not do an analysis of the alternative that replaces the bridge in the exact same location, right?
They looked at an alignment only, but they didn't study alternative structure types for the approaches. That's key to minimizing the width of the impact.
And say they did that, what would you forecast as
I would forecast
potential outcome?
That the potential outcome would be a bridge along the existing alignment would have less of an impact on the creek.
And what would be that mitigation of impact? When you say less of an impact, that's what I'm trying to zero in on. And
they would remove fewer trees and disrupt less of the creek north of the existing bridge site.
Are we talking one, two, several trees, or are we talking what do you think is that sort of radius of impact?
I think you'd be able to keep the mature oaks and many of the willows, and you would disrupt less of the creek bed north of the existing bridge.
And ESHA concerns of any further kind?
I'm not prepared to comment on those.
I'm
not an expert in that.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you.
Commissioner Stone.
Thank you. I move that the commission determine that appeal number A-3-SLO-10-039 raises no substantial issue with respect to the grounds on which the appeal has been filed under Section 603 of the Coastal Act. And I'm recommending a no vote.
I have a motion and a second. A motion by Commissioner Stone, a second by Commissioner Schallenberger. Would you like to speak to your motion?
I would briefly, and this is not a hearing to get into the issues. This is a substantial hearing issue, whether or not there are issues that are raised by this substantial enough for us to get a de novo hearing. While I would tend to agree that taking out the center pier is much better for steelhead habitat than leaving it in, as has been alleged, I think there are certain questions, especially about the mercury in the creek. And I'm not convinced that the current plan has addressed or gives me at least enough information to understand the impact of heavy metals locally, upstream and downstream with this amount of disturbance. So that's one thing that I think we should take a look at. And again, some of these questions become fairly close, but as I read through the staff report and listened to the issues, I would like to have a little bit more understanding of what the issues are. I'm not saying necessarily that it's not a good project, but that's not really what's before us today. It's whether we feel that there should be a de novo hearing on this issue. I appreciate staff working with the local county to try and come up with an agreement. There certainly clearly needs to be a new bridge here and needs to be a project here, but I'm not necessarily convinced that this project is the one that should go forward at this time. And for me, I feel I need a better review of the situation.
Commissioner Schallenberger.
I think Commissioner Stone stated it very well. Thank you.
Madam Commissioner Chair. Bloom.
I'm going to support the motion. The issue of mercury is the one that stands out for me. I think staff has covered it, but I'd like to be absolutely certain on it, so I'd like some additional detail when it does, if the motion passes and it does come back.
Mr. Douglas?
Yes, if I may. I understand the concerns that are raised here, but on this, like the last, I'm really concerned about the workload implications of this. These are issues that we try very hard to look at and impose a meaningful Coastal Act filter on. I understand, as Dan said, we're not bridge designers and we can't redesign this bridge. We've been through bridge issues before. where we have tried, and we just haven't been able to come up with that. So, yes, there's always more information that can be provided, but I'm just asking you, please, to look at the implications for our staffing, which is going to get even more dire. And if this goes substantial issue, I can't tell you when we'll be able to bring it back, given the workload in this office. So it shouldn't be the sole criteria, but I do think it should be a factor in the equation.
Commissioner Blank.
Yes, Madam Chair. I think Director Douglas stated about 98% about what I was going to say. I tend to look at staff's work yesterday on Samoa and think of that as the type of stuff that the Coastal Commission, a state regulatory body, ought to be involved in. It's not that I don't think we should be involved in this. I think we should be involved in everything. And if we had a staff of 5,000 people and an infinite budget, then we should. But I think as commissioners, we need to be exercising some judgment here on how to help staff manage their time. And I am afraid that I will be a little less polite than Executive Director Douglas, that we seem to be abrogating our responsibility here. While on each individual one of these issues, we could make the case that we'd like to look at everything. I just would like us to act like managers rather than the one half of our responsibility, which is environmental stewards, which we still have. And I'm not suggesting we abdicate those responsibilities, but we have another set of responsibilities on if our staff doesn't just gets a list from us that is a to-do list with nothing falling off on the bottom, we're going to miss the things that are really important. And I just want to emphasize that again. I deal with this, or used to deal with this all the time, managing a staff. If you give them everything to do, nothing gets done. And therefore, you failed as a manager. So I would like us to think also as management people, in addition to our jobs as environmental stewards. So I am going to be supporting the staff on this vote.
Commissioner Mercurini, then Commissioner Bloom.
I think Commissioner Blake makes excellent points, and that's exactly why I was asking about the line call. I'm concerned that we try to be as thoughtful and clear about what we ask of the staff in taking positions, but we don't necessarily get an aggregate inventory as to all the work that is, requiring staff to meet our expectations. And that was one of the reasons why I was asking about lasering in on just how critical this is in the sort of larger scheme of things based on resources available to get to the analysis where we are, I think speaks to one of my motivations as to what Commissioner Blank just referenced, and he's right. So I don't know if there's anybody that's really wrong in this case. So it becomes that, I think, an enviable task of this body to try to be honest, intellectually honest, that are we just loading and offloading onto you all, and ultimately this just doesn't get done. And that's what I hear, or done in a pace that we would hope. And I'm hearing Director Douglas suggesting that could be the case. And I think we should be, upfront about that. So I'm open to going along the lines of what I just heard, but this isn't a conversation we have often.
I also take Commissioner Blank's point, and perhaps what I will do is ask staff, since the mercury contamination is the primary issue that I'm concerned about, perhaps I can prevail upon the commission and ask staff a question that perhaps you can go into a little bit more detail, and I understand you might be repeating some of the things you've already said, so that I can make sure today, perhaps, that staff has covered this issue and I need not be concerned.
Yeah, I'd say, thank you, Commissioner. As we indicated in the staff report, we do believe that the mercury issue was addressed by the county, and there's a little more detail in the staff report, but I'll let Mr. Bishop, he's more familiar with the specifics of it, he can give you a better answer, perhaps.
Thank you. Yes, the county did look at mercury levels and found that they were below the applicable regulatory standards for water and sediment based on monitoring performed by the regional board. The county approval requires a regional water quality control board sign-off. It requires a comprehensive stormwater pollution prevention plan. It also requires comprehensive drainage, sedimentation, and erosion control plans, and multiple BMPs designed specifically to address this issue.
Thank you. No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to also observe that Mr. Hutchinson's here from the county. To the extent you wanted to know more about the monitoring that they did do and some of the steps that they took.
Through the chair, if we could ask Mr. Hutchinson to briefly fill us in on those points.
Yes, Mark Hutchinson, Department of Public Works again. I do need to inform your commission that the Department of Public Works and specifically my environmental division is very, very familiar with the issues of mercury in this and other watersheds in our county. We are currently partnering with the US EPA to remediate mercury impacts in a companion watershed on the inland side in Las Tablas Creek. So unfortunately for us, we've been involved in the mercury issue now for quite some time. For Santa Rosa Creek, we did look at the Regional Water Quality Control Board's work. As you may know, Santa Rosa Creek is not currently listed as impaired for metals. The mine that was previously listed, we believe, is probably in reference to the Oceanic Mine, which is about 3 miles upstream and does cross under the county road where it drains into the creek. And we've dealt with that issue in partnership with National Marine Fisheries, Fish and Game, and Regional Board on previous occasions. We looked at Regional Board's monitoring data. We looked specifically at their more recent data. They have a very large package that's currently at US EPA to update the impaired waters list, the 303D list. And Santa Rosa Creek is not on that list for metals, which is good for the creek because we have other ongoing projects to improve fish passage and habitat in that area. We also considered how the bridge would interact with the mercury issues. We have concerns about acid water drainage, which typically comes out of the mine because it mobilizes mercury. We have concerns about sediment being disturbed. We have concerns about disturbance of vegetation. We know that mercury is sequestered in plant roots, and that's another long story in the county. But we're confident that the way the project is designed, first, to stabilize the banks and do away with the long-term hydromodification effects of the current bridge. But during the construction process, we're confident that the application of the stormwater pollution prevention permit, BMPs, certainly in its new and revised form from the State Board, will be very effective on this site. I would also add that we are working very hard on this project to do this construction in one season, if at all possible. That's not a determining factor because sites can be stabilized, but we can build the bridge alongside the existing and then remove the existing. We have a construction window of June 15th to late October at the latest. We want to be in, out of the bridge, bank stabilized, and done. It's been suggested that on the existing alignment, we could do half-width construction. In fact, and we're aware of that technique, in fact, that would extend the construction season past one season. So we considered, in looking at the existing alignment, if we went that way, we would close the road.
I'm sorry. You were asked questions about the mercury, and
any
it's not an opportunity to testify again.
Thank you, sir, and I appreciate the opportunity to hear more detail, and I would like to hear from other commissioners while I reconsider my position.
I have Commissioner Schallenberger, then Commissioner Allgood, and then if it's okay, I'd like to make a statement as well.
For me, hearing the commission deliberation and hearing from the executive director, I have decided to change my vote, and I will be voting in support of finding no substantial issue.
Yes, I hadn't made up my mind how I was going to vote until the discussion on the mercury, because that was a concern to me, and I absorb adequately what staff had said in the report, and so I'm not going to support a finding.
Can't hear you.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I the discussion about mercury was a concern. I think staff and the applicant have adequately addressed it. I don't think there is grounds for an appeal here on that regard as to the siting of the bridge. I think the county has proposed what is a minimally damaging alternative and adequate mitigation. So I'm not going to support the appeal.
Let me say something on the. I understand this is a close call, and I understand the time constraints, but it is something that the commission has to filter as to whether they think it's important or not. Can I ask you to put two slides back up for me? One, it's the slides that were showing the, and I can't remember who had the slides up, but it's the one, there's one that shows the alignment in its current, the current bridge, and then it shows then the second slide that shows where the new alignment goes, because I think it, I'm trying to figure out how the impacts to the habitat can be equivalent, because in the one case, it basically stays in the same location, so there are no more impacts, there are less impacts than what is there now, because they're going to be using this new they can use the new method of the abutment. But in the other case, okay, that one, that's the current. Now let's go to the, yeah, so it's now going in a whole new area and taking a whole swath of habitat out that it wouldn't have to take out, and I understand that they'll restore the other one, but still it, I'm trying to understand how the impact can be equivalent.
Yes, Madam Chair. The impacts that, in terms of the evaluation that we did, the impacts that you see that are similar, it's because the existing alignment includes a construction phase as well that involves more than just the existing alignment. So there's an area around the abutments and around the center support where there's going to need to be access, construction access down into the creek area. And that construction access, that temporary kind of impacts, are a big part of the area of disturbance. So that's where you get the larger area of disturbance than just the bridge itself.
And I can see you have that in both cases, but in addition to that, you're taking out all of those trees. You have to be. I mean, all of that habitat that for the new alignment has to come out, and that's my principal concern here. I'm not an expert on water and mercury, and I kind of agree that that may be an issue, but I can't make a determination on that. But I'm looking at the impact to the habitat and the riparian corridor. That you got construction impacts in the stream either way you go, and that's true. But I don't understand how you can tell me that there's not additional impacts with this particular alignment in terms of removing all of those trees and habitat that clearly has to be removed for the new one. So from my perspective, that for me is a cause of substantial issue. Are there any other comments? So Commissioner Mercurini, and then I'll call for a vote.
Just one question to staff or Mr. Douglas. As I said earlier, I don't think there's probably anybody up here that is wrong. And so based on how they're filtering the information and the realities of what the staff might be able to do about it. So I'm wondering that, I know it's a black and white SI or no SI, but I also don't think we can discount some of the things that have been said by Commissioner Stone or Juan. Is there any way that we're able to stipulate at least concern or finding of some kind, or does it have to be just strictly one or the other?
In terms of what's before you, either you find substantial issue or no substantial issue. If there are issues that you think could be addressed, for example, by providing more time and some discussion with the applicant, then you could continue. And my sense is, unless there's a timing constraint, and from time to time, the commission has done that, and modifications have been made that then allowed the dropping of the appeal or changing the staff recommendation or answering questions. But I think that in terms of our analysis here, we just don't think that it's that significant in terms of the difference in terms of the habitat impacts. And that's why we think it is a judgment call, but we think clearly here there are going to be impacts. The increment of impact, adverse impact, isn't going to be that significant by the design that they've got. And that's why we were recommending no substantial issue on this point. And while I've got the mic, just on the mercury issue, I know our staff looked at it. And as I said yesterday, we are really trying to be more and more cooperative and collaborative with the Regional Water Quality Control Board, the entities that do have the primary responsibilities for addressing the water quality and chemistry or toxin impacts here. Not that we ignore it, and we think that they addressed it, but we are more deferential than maybe we have been in the past. And I think that's part of our whole effort to be more efficient and effective, too.
Thank you.
Thank you. Why don't you, we're going to call the roll. The baker of the motion is recommending a yes vote, which would result in the finding of no. Okay, would you reread the motion? I guess I misinterpreted what you recommended.
It was to find substantial issue.
Right.
So it was.
Okay.
It was to find substantial issue. So it's the motion that is presented here. I moved that the commission determine that the appeal raises no substantial issue, and I'm recommending a no vote.
Which would be the finding of substantial
issue. Which would be
issue.
Finding of substantial issue.
A yes vote is no substantial issue. A no vote is substantial issue. Call the roll.
Commissioner Blank.
Yes.
Blank, yes. Commissioner Bloom.
Yes.
Bloom, yes. Commissioner Mercurimi.
Yes.
Mercurimi, yes. Commissioner Mitchell?
Yes.
Mitchell, yes. Commissioner Schellenberger?
Yes.
Schellenberger, yes. Commissioner Stone?
No.
Stone, no. Commissioner Allgood?
Yes.
Allgood, yes. Chair Wan?
No.
Chair Wan, no. The vote is 6 yes, 2 no.
Commission has found no substantial issue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And unless you, and I understand you have some more public comments, I believe.
Are we finished?
No, we have one more item.
Oh, we have one more item.
I was in a hurry.
So that will bring us to the regular coastal permit application calendar. Are we? So that'll bring us to item number 11A. This is an application in the City of Santa Cruz, joint application by the City of Santa Cruz and UCSC for a research project out on the Santa Cruz Wharf. And I'd like to ask Central Coastal Program Analyst Susan Craig to give the staff recommendation.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Commissioners. The University of California at Santa Cruz, in collaboration with the City of Santa Cruz, proposes to perform a study in which UCSC student and faculty investigators and City of Santa Cruz staff will evaluate solar and wind renewable energy technologies at the Santa Cruz Municipal Wharf. Next slide. The proposed project includes the temporary installation of a solar panel, an 11-foot-tall small-scale vertical access wind turbine, and associated skid-mounted sensors on a platform on the roof of the Wharf headquarters building. The equipment would be removed at the end of the study, which will last about a year. Next slide. The proposed research equipment will be mounted on the roof of the Wharf headquarters building. The proposed solar panel and associated sensors and equipment are low in profile and will not be highly visible. The proposed wind turbine will extend about 11 feet above the roof and thus will be more obvious in public views, including from the wharf itself. The turbine should only minimally affect views on the wharf itself, including because of the degree of existing development there, as you can see on this slide. In terms of other views, the wharf is prominently visible from a number of nearby public viewpoints. This slide shows the proposed project site as seen from Westcliff Drive, the Westcliff Drive public path. The windmill component of the proposed project will be visible from Westcliff Drive as well as from nearby beaches and from Lighthouse Point. However, as you can see in the slide, the wind turbine will be seen in the context of existing wharf development, which includes a number of buildings, some of which are two stories, as well as light poles, antennas, and other existing rooftop development. Thus, the wind turbine will be seen from these public viewpoints in conjunction with and as part of existing wharf development, and the minor visual intrusion of the wind turbine should not significantly degrade these public views. In addition, the proposed wind turbine and other equipment will only be installed at this location for a year and will be removed at the conclusion of the research project, meaning any such visual incursion will be temporary. The other equipment proposed to be mounted on the roof is smaller in scale and in height than the proposed wind turbine and will have minimal impact on views from nearby public viewpoints. For these reasons, the proposed project can be found consistent with the Coastal Act's public view shed protection provisions. Next slide. The wharf extends out into Monterey Bay, and this overwater location contributes to the wharf being a magnet for marine wildlife, including a variety of shorebirds. The proposed rooftop research elements will be mostly low profile and do not raise any potential marine wildlife resource concerns, with the exception of the vertical access wind turbine component. The concern with the wind turbine is that the shorebirds may fly into its rotating blades and be injured or killed. There is a significant body of literature on bird strikes related to large wind farms and large horizontal access turbines and the impacts of such structures on birds. Based on this body of knowledge, wind turbines in general have developed the reputation of being dangerous to avian wildlife. However, there is no literature regarding the effects of small-scale vertical access wind turbines on birds. While it is assumed by some that small-scale vertical access wind turbines, such as the one proposed, do not lead to this type of significant bird strike problems associated with larger-scale horizontal wind turbines, and while this assumption makes sense given the relative difference in scale between the two types, it is not possible to verify this assumption due to the lack of data regarding bird strikes and small-scale vertical access wind turbines. Thus, although staff believes that the wind turbine in this case is unlikely to lead to significant bird injury and mortality, staff cannot conclusively state this to be the case. In this case, the wind turbine component of the proposed research project provides an excellent opportunity to collect data to better inform the Commission and others in the future regarding the potential of bird strike injuries and fatalities due to the installation of small-scale vertical access wind turbines on or near the coast. Staff, including the Commission's senior ecologist, Dr. John Dixon, have reviewed the proposed project and have coordinated with resource counterparts at the California Department of Fish and Game and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service biologists, and they are supportive of the proposed project and the concomitant opportunity to obtain data regarding small-scale vertical access wind turbines and potential bird strikes. As such, staff recommends that the Commission approve a coastal development permit for the project, subject to requiring a bird strike research plan that will require daily inspection of the rooftop and surrounding area for the duration of the wind turbine component of the research project to identify any dead or injured birds, regular reporting of bird strike data to the Executive Director, Fish and Game, and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and submission of a final report on bird strikes to the Executive Director, to Fish and Game, and to the Fish and Wildlife Service, and to the California Audubon Society upon completion of the wind turbine component of the research project. If at any time during the research project the Executive Director determines that the wind turbine is having a significant adverse impact on birds, including based on input from Fish and Game and Fish and Wildlife, the wind turbine component of the research project will be halted immediately and the wind turbine removed from the roof. In conclusion, the proposed project will provide important data for understanding the costs and benefits of solar and wind renewable energy technologies and can be conditioned to ensure resource protection. Staff recommends that the Commission approve a conditional CDP for the proposed energy research project, including the wind turbine component. The motion to adopt the staff recommendation is found on pages 3 and 4 of the staff report. This concludes staff's presentation, and I believe UCSC research staff is present if you have questions for them. Thank you.
Yes. Ex parte communication, starting, am I right? Commissioner Blank?
Just a matter of disclosure, I am a trustee of the UC Santa Cruz Foundation, though there's no compensation. I consulted with counsel and said I just ought to put that on record, and there is nothing that will stop me from making an impartial judgment on this issue.
Commissioner Stone? And I'm just looking for ex parte. Oh, okay. With that, I'll open the public hearing, and I have two speakers from UC Santa Cruz. I have no idea what order you want to come up in. If you have your first speaker come up, and I have a John Vesky and a Tiffany Wise West. So would your first speaker please come forward?
Good morning, Commission. My name is John Bombacci. I'm the wharf supervisor with the City of Santa Cruz.
Okay, so how much time will you need for the presentation from UC?
Ma'am, I'm simply here to let you know that I'll be happy to answer questions and to introduce the next two speakers.
Thank you.
I'd like to introduce Professor John Vesecki.
Okay, and how long will you need?
If I could have 3 minutes, that would be great.
Okay, that will be fine.
Commissioner Juan and other commissioners, my name is John.
You need to state your name for the record.
Oh, V as in victory, E-S-E-C-K-Y.
Thank you.
So I'm here to provide information about the engineering education and renewable energy practices that are aspects of this project. It's a Pathfinder project, and the goal of this project is to do an assessment of how well solar and wind energy actually work on the wharf in this sensitive marine environment, and of course, vice versa, the impact of the environment on the gadgets and the gadgets on the environment. And so this involves a number of aspects. One is, what is the real solar illumination? You can make estimates, but the real wharf is something you actually have to go down and measure, and that's what we're planning to do. And the same goes for the wind. The wind up on West Cliff is different than the wind down on the wharf, and so we want to go out and measure it. So another aspect that's important to measure is the impact of marine corrosion on the solar panels and on the wind turbine to affect the life of an installation that would be bigger. The bird fouling is another aspect. This will degrade the performance of solar panels as well as possibly corroding them. And then, of course, in any engineering problem, you have a lot of unknowns. You haven't thought about how to solve the problem. And bird safety, the next speaker will deal with. The idea is to provide data that will allow evaluation and the engineering design data that would be used if this were to be scaled up to a larger scale project that would provide energy that would make the wharf more or completely self-sufficient. And education is another aspect of this project. Two student projects have already been done on this. We want to provide demonstration materials for use on the wharf and in the exploration center at the end of the wharf, research projects at other institutions, and mainly to get some experience for how these things can operate in a sensitive coastal environment. If this project moved on to fruition, it could mark California and Santa Cruz communities as being in the forefront of addressing our energy and climate change problems. Thank you.
Tiffany Wise West, and how much time will you need?
3 minutes, please.
Thank you very much.
Hello and good morning, commissioners. My name is Tiffany Wise West. I'm a licensed civil engineer and a PhD student at UCSC in the Environmental Studies Department. My role in the Coastal Energy Research Facility Project, or SERF as we call it, is to conduct the social science research as well as the permitting for the project. As has been mentioned, through the partnership with the City of Santa Cruz, we have several educational sustainability efforts currently underway. Our research has, our social science research has shown that stakeholders, specifically the business owners the business owners have overwhelmingly support this project. As has been noted by Dr. Vasecki, the data we will collect from this project has, not only will help determine the suitability of renewable energy at this coastal location, but will also make substantial contributions to the understandings of bird and vertical axis wind turbine interactions, an area where no research currently exists. Should the findings of this research also lead to the future scale-up of renewable energy at the wharf, we've estimated that the energy savings from a wharf independent of non-renewable energy will contribute significantly to the city's year 2020 carbon reduction goal. Moreover, we hope through our experience with this project to establish Santa Cruz as a leader in renewable energy along the coast and to assist other coastal communities by sharing our experience in planning and integrating renewable energy into our coastal community. We're excited to undertake this important project and to work with the Coastal Commission in ensuring that the coastal bird species are protected through a bird strike monitoring plan. I'd like you to know that we agree to the conditions set forth in the staff report, and we will be submitting such plan shortly for approval. I thank you for consideration of our permit application, and we're happy to answer any questions that you might have on the project. Thank you.
John, and I'm not sure I know how to pronounce this last name.
Bombacci.
Huh?
Good morning.
If you would, do you wish to speak?
No. Just to say that the city has worked cooperatively hand in hand with the university on this project in the hopes of reducing the city's carbon footprint and perhaps with a goal of energy self-sufficiency for the wharf in the future.
Thank you. With that, I'll close the public hearing. Return to staff. You have any additional comments?
No, nothing further to add at this point, but we're available for questions.
Okay. Commissioner Stone, then Commissioner Blank.
Thank you. I move that the Commission approve Coastal Development Permit Number 3-10-061 pursuant to the staff recommendation, and I'm asking for a yes vote.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Stone, seconded by Commissioner Bloom. You would like to speak to your motion?
I would. The issue that raises the most concern for me here is bird strike and dealing with putting any kind of a wind generating device up into potential paths of birds. We've seen this before. We're going to continue to see this. We know that local jurisdictions are going to struggle with this. So I'll defer to my colleagues who have a better understanding of the potential impact on whether the bird strike plan is adequate, and if there are some changes that you'd like to make, I would certainly consider those. But from my standpoint, I think it'd be very helpful to this commission and to the science and the concern at large to have some of the information about the impact that the small scale wind turbine like this is going to have in the area. So I look forward to the results of this. Unfortunately, if there is a loss of avian resources, that will be a shame. But at some point, we need better information about these small-scale wind turbines. This has limited duration, and from my take on the bird strike plan, if it does seem to be excessive, then the commission does have the ability to ask that the wind turbine be removed. That to me sounds appropriate, but I'll certainly look to other commissioners on that. So I'm hoping that we will approve this, and I think we all serve to learn quite a bit from this project.
Commissioner Blank. Commissioner Bloom.
Thank you. I agree completely with Commissioner Stone, so I won't repeat his comments. I would only add that about 2 years ago, I was in discussion with a scientist in Southern California about doing precisely this project on Santa Monica Pier. So I'm happy that it's happening, and look forward to the results.
Now, Commissioner Blank.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can I have the scientist come up just for Quick question.
I'm not sure who's the scientist here.
I'm doing social science research. He does engineering.
I'm an engineering.
Well, whoever picked the siting for the, who picked the siting?
That you can speak to that.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And can you just tell me why this site in relationship to the birds? Did you pick a particular fly? Well, let me be specific. Did you pick a, have you mapped the flyways in Santa Cruz and decided that this was the appropriate place to measure density of birds, or was it just an available site?
And before you do, you need to state your name for the record, and then you can answer.
Oh, I'm John Vaseski, C-K-Y at the end. It's a Czech name. We didn't actually pick this with relation to the birds at all. We picked this site because of the initiative to make the wharf energy self-sufficient. And so we wanted to find a site on the wharf that was easily accessible and where we had good support. And John Bombacci, who spoke to you, is the wharf manager. And he has been excellent cooperation, given us excellent cooperation in where we've gone so far. So we sort of picked the site. And the bird issue is not our major thrust. It's evaluating renewable energy. But in order to evaluate it, we have to know, is it going to really impact bird safety?
Got it. Thank you. So just to make thank you very much. So I think I now understand the project. It's not a bird research project. It's an energy project to make sure that the site for assumably a proposed permanent tower really has limited avian damage, which I think still pretty good. But I was a little confused that we were doing avian research on flyways and the still, I think Commissioner Wand will have some additional comments on and maybe amendments to this, but I agree with Commissioner Stone. I think this is appropriate for us learning about wind turbines, and I think you know, we're going to be seeing a lot of these. I remember about 6 months ago or maybe a year ago, we saw one in Santa Cruz as well. I voted against it because of exactly this issue. There was insufficient data, and I was afraid of 1,000 of these popping up across the coast of California without any data. So to argue that I'm going to oppose this because we don't have data is a little recursive. And while I realize we'll have some take on birds and would like to minimize that, I think the data will make this commission a lot smarter about the next time we see one. And I not only mean the commissioners, I mean our staff. We can now at least refer to one data point and know what that looks like. And if, by the way, for staff, if that ends up providing valuable data, I'm sure staff will be asking for more data. The next time an applicant does propose a tower, we'll at least have a kind of a baseline of what kind of monitoring that you need for how long. So I'm interested to hear about Commissioner Wand's proposed amendment. So I'm going to support this with those amendments.
Commissioner Mercorini, then Commissioner Allgood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree. I think we should support this. I also would like to hear if there's any amendments, but I think that this particular issue speaks to a larger challenge for California and, frankly, this country. With great desire in California, you've got cities and counties who are pursuing community choice aggregation as alternative energy suppliers. As an alternate to cities that are dominated by private utility companies, they're now contemplating capital infrastructure infusions of solar and wind, and these issues of environmental impact, especially on the avian community and others, presents an interesting debate within a very like-minded community that wants to be vigorous, aggressive, as our federal government, state government tends to be somewhat slow at times on these issues, that sometimes local government would like to help pick up the pace. But the guidelines as presented either by CEQA or by any other protocol evaluating these particular impacts really are very thin. And it somewhat defers or deflects back to local government to try to fill in the blanks based on what those foreseen and unforeseen impacts are. There are a number of cities, counties that I'm aware of up and down California who are looking at this question of not just one wind turbine, and there are varying degrees of size and effect, whether on par with like Ultimate Pass, which obviously is one of the more well-known turfs of this area, but most of them are smaller than that. It still requires both planning, land use, and respective department or regional department on the environments in those localities to figure this question out. And at the same time, there is that hope that we couldn't move fast enough for the installation of these, you know, sort of major alternatives then to our reliance on fossil fuel. Based on the data that's here, and I do think it's limited data, in terms of what those unintentional consequences could be on the avian population, I still think that we should pursue this particular study, but it also adds one more example to the kind of dated outlook that I think both state and regional and local law exist by in answering this larger question. And the more that turbines dot the landscape of California, the more I think it forces this question, and I'm hoping that it does not go unanswered in any near distant soon.
Commissioner Allgood.
Just to the engineering scientist, did you consider testing alternative turbine designs at this project site to see if there was a significant difference?
Or
was
well, I think the idea here was that from the viewpoint, two viewpoints that made us pick a vertical axis, and we had originally thought, well, we'll have a vertical axis and a horizontal axis, but we are out of money. And so we have reserved the money to purchase the wind turbine. It hasn't been, it's not waiting to be set up. It's, we have the money, but we haven't set it up. So we thought about using both styles, and we thought that the vertical axis had two advantages. One was that it would, it's purported as staff mentioned, to be less of a threat in interaction with birds because they see it as a tree. It's rotating around fast and it looks like a solid object to them, so they say. And the other thing was that it looks different. It's kind of a unusual and perhaps even attractive feature for putting renewable energy into action. So those were our two things, was it's something different, and it doesn't already have a history of interaction with birds, and we'd like to study that.
I am supportive of the project. I think it's important that we do this, particularly given, and I am in agreement with what my fellow commissioners have to say. But I do have some concerns about the monitoring, because the monitoring has to be as accurate as it can be. Otherwise, we could wind up with a false negative, and that would be problematic. So, for example, where this is located on a pier gives me cause to be concerned about what the monitoring is, basically carcass counts, as I understand it. But am I correct, or is there more to the monitoring than the carcass counts?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
We've structured it that it's in terms of bird mortality, but also in terms of injured birds or evidence of either of those things.
Well, that's the way that's done. But, of course, if you have an injured bird that lands, or a dead bird that lands in the water, because this is over the water, you will not find that bird. And many carcasses disappear overnight. So one of the things that would be important, and I'll call you up in a minute. Okay, one of the things that's important is to how you factor that in the way in which you extrapolate. And that's what my understanding of how you do this, whether it's, the when I say carcass counts, it's not just dead birds, but it's injured birds. And so, if you want to come up.
Yes, what we had were going to propose in our plan, which is in a draft stage at this point, this is the research plan for the bird monitoring, is to have a camera that takes pictures probably about every 10 minutes, and then we take a picture, and it would be up at a little bit higher height so that it looks out over the wind turbine and the surrounding area. and then we would take images of the set, and this is like one of these panoramic security cameras, and then we would match up one image from 10 minutes ago with now and see if there's any change.
And that's excellent. Thank you.
There's one other thing. Yeah. There's a student project going on that might use other means of monitoring the birds to see what their flight path is. And do they go around this or do they not? That's kind of in the formative stages.
Now,
I get more information.
I would hope you'd get that second one in because while we're doing this, we should get accurate information. And I know one of the ways that you do get more accurate information is to put sonar on, but that's a very expensive process. But if you are putting a camera on, and if this research that, because you want to know, you've got 10 minutes in between, what the birds in the area, okay, and what their flight pattern is. If you're doing both of those, that's excellent. What I would like, and I don't know that there's an amendment that's necessary, is just to get commitment from, and again, from the university, if someone can come up and I can ask for this, maybe the gentleman can come back up, that in the process of when you prepare your report and in the process of preparing the monitoring plan, that you work with our staff and with the Audubon Society to come up with what you're going to use for your a final method of extrapolation, because that's the issue. There's apparently in this field studying this, that's where the big argument is how do you extrapolate from the counts to what actually happened. Now, having the TV cameras is going to help that significantly, and if you do the other study as well. So if I will be comfortable with this if I can get that kind of a commitment from you, that that's who you will work with in terms of what how you're going to extrapolate it. What I don't want is to have an argument at the end with our staff as to, oh, well, you use this method of extrapolation, not the other. I'd like this to really be helpful to us in the future.
Well, I think we want to submit a draft plan and get comments from Audubon. That's an excellent idea, and staff, then redo the plan if necessary to the extent necessary, and then I think presumably staff will eventually sign off on it, and then we'll be ready to go.
And that would include the method of extrapolation.
The method of extrapolation.
Because that's what what's going to be used in the basis in the final report to determine whether there was an impact or not.
Madam Chair, if I may.
Yes.
We're going to be reviewing the plan, and we'll have Dr. Dixon weighing in on that, and we're going to ensure that the method of extrapolation is there, and we concur with the commission sentiment. We need to maximize its utility, so that's fully our intent with this condition.
Okay. That takes care of my concerns. Okay, I understand you're not a bird scientist, so, but that does take care of my concerns. If that is an area, one of the areas that we are going to be looking at in our final sign-off on the draft plan, then I'm comfortable with this.
Thank you. Any more questions?
Any other questions or comments from commissioners? I have a motion and a second. Any objection to a unanimous roll call? Seeing none, the project is approved.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to mention that your energy staff and statewide planning staff are also working right now on guidance that we might be able to provide to local governments, going back to some of the comments about the interest and push in this direction. So guidance for LCP policies and issues to consider in small-scale solar and wind energy projects. Hopefully that will be coming back in the next 6 months or so.
Thank you very much. We have a lot of public speaker slips. I'm going to start calling them.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Before you do that, can I just give you a quick update on the tsunami?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure everybody in the room would like to hear that.
The information we're getting, is that there was extensive damage in Crescent City. The harbor, pretty much all the docks were taken out and boats destroyed. Mixed reports on homes being damaged as well, and just had a report that there are possible deaths included in that area. I think the evacuation, at least from the law enforcement folks' side, worked, but maybe, I don't know what this is about people being swept out to sea where they were from, but the damage appears to be quite extensive. I have asked our staff to, summon our staff to get up there as soon as they can. Highway 101 is closed in several locations because the subsequent surges were actually higher than the initial one, and there's still more that are anticipated. But we'll probably have staff on scene tomorrow to help with emergency permits, and obviously we want also an early assessment, but mainly to make sure that none of our requirements get in the way of actions that need to be taken immediately to respond. Sorry to say that Crescent City has been hit again.
Can we ask a question?
Yeah, I have a number of people who've asked on the list. Thank you for that update. It's unfortunate, but Commissioner Stone, then Blank, then Mercurini.
And just a quick update from what I can see, I think the damage in Santa Cruz County in this area has been at the harbor. There's at least $2 million worth of damage that they're identifying at this point, boats floating around. So there's been some significant damage there. There had been a lot of traffic snarl-ups for folks here. Those seem to have cleared, according to the sheriff. But stay tuned. They're predicting pulses to be coming in also throughout the day.
Commissioner Blank.
Yes, Madam Chair. I think somewhat relevant to the oversight of this commission might also be an observation about the nuclear power plants in Japan whose cooling systems have failed and in the quake, and I think in a very wonderfully understated Japanese statement, the Minister of Interior said things are not going per plan because the backup systems have failed. So when they say things like there are no radiation leaks as of now, you again tend to read those with those typical understatements. I just mention these because these are issues under our purview that at times come up in front of the commission, and these are always good reminders of some of our other responsibilities.
And I might just point out on that, I did just look at the latest as well, and apparently the cooling system in one plant has failed, and the backup system failed, and the United States has sent some special coolant through the Air Force to the site, but it looks pretty alarming. So just stay tuned on that one.
Commissioner Mercurini.
Mr. Douglas, do we know anything about, you mentioned that the emergency broadcast systems had kicked in for the tsunami. They're usually entwined with the other cities a little bit below that area. So do we know if, it feels a little bit isolated where we are at the moment, even though we're the Coastal Commission, if the other cities were those warning systems and alarm systems kicked in too?
Well, my understanding, just from preliminary reports from Mark Johnson and other little emails I'm getting here, is that the systems did kick in and that the sirens did go off, in fact, quite early this morning, since we had such a long forewarning on this, about 9 hours. So my understanding is that the warning system, tsunami warning system, actually worked. But, you know, we'll have to wait until we get more information to assess what worked and what may not have worked and what may have worked better.
Just one comment, and that is, this is a very unfortunate way to be reminded that the work that we do, when we do it to try to do proactive planning that helps in the prevention of at least the loss of life from these types of activities, is so important. It's very easy when it hasn't happened recently to forget it and try to ignore it. But I think this should serve as a reminder, this and other types of incidents, that it really is necessary to plan for this, and at least, I don't know that you can prevent structure damage, but at least to try to do everything you can to prevent the loss of human life.
Well, and the timing here, the fact that the commission required certain changes in the Crescent City LCP that did address tsunamis and sea level rise, now adopted by the city, we'll see to what extent what had been recommended by the commission and now adopted by the city might have made a difference. But I know on the one big project that you recently approved, my guess is that the requirements that you impose there, it's not built yet, but the requirements that you impose will have done a job in terms of safety to the humans and the property on the project once it's completed. But I want to report back directly on that because that was very controversial.
Yeah, and that, and of course, we'll learn from this, and it may be that the requirements need to be adjusted in some way. We should learn, so we should keep track of this and really figure out what kind of conditions we need to impose. And again, we may need to change it, but it would be good to keep that up. We get criticized for trying to do this, but it really is important. Commissioner Allgood?
Director Douglas, I was pleased to hear that you've dispatched staff to the north to expedite emergency permits. I would suggest that we make information available on the website that is in progress and monitor conditions around the state, and as they're warranted, perhaps devote some extra staff on if there are other damage that needs to be dealt with emergency permits. But I think it would be good for the folks to know the Coastal Commission is responsive to emergencies like this.
Any other comments? Okay, with that, I'm going to go to public comment. Debbie Bulger, and I'm going to call names because I'm sure a lot of people have left. Okay, Gillian Greensite, I'm sorry. And Fred Geiger. Don Weber. Maybe the best thing would be, so I don't have to go through all of these, is if you just sort of form a line if you want to speak at public comment. State your name, and you have 3 minutes, so I don't have to go through all 20 of these speaker slips. Thank you.
I'm Don Weber. I'm with Build a Better La Bahia. I guess I'm here to welcome you back just as you're getting up to leave town, but it's always good to see you, the Coastal Commission in town. I hope that this is now part of your regular circuit. I want to welcome the new commissioners, and I hope that I get to meet both of you very soon. I'm the co-founder, one of the co-founders of Build a Better La Bahia. We are a group that is dedicated to ensure that the La Bahia site between the wharf and the boardwalk in Santa Cruz is developed properly. A bit of history. In 2009, after the project was approved at the local level, we filed a petition for writ of mandamus in the California Superior Court that alleged CEQA violations for failure to consider the proper range of alternatives. That petition was denied, and that ruling is now on appeal. I don't know when it will be heard. Over that same time frame in 2009, your commission extended for 12 months the period to hear the matter, and the city was forced to withdraw the application and resubmit it subsequently without changes. I looked in the record, and it was in May of 2008, that's 34 months ago, nearly 3 years, that the Coastal Commission staff first wrote and confirmed in writing to the city just what the problems with the city's approach would be with reference to nonconformance to the provisions of the Coastal Act. In the intervening 3 years, the city has tinkered around the edges with it, but has not made any significant change to the plan. And I think that the real reason that it has been postponed now is because they were aware of the likelihood that their application would be rejected because it violates 30251 and 30253 of the Coastal Act rather plainly in its current form. It requires the demolition of a protected landmark, which is protected under the LCP, the certified LCP, and it provides for a building envelope well in excess of what is now approved under the current certified LCP. For both of those reasons, I think the city will have a problem surviving this commission unless substantial changes are made, and I'll be back to demonstrate that conformance or nonconformance when the time is right. Thank you all.
Thank you. And don't forget to state your name for the record.
Hi, my name is Sabrina Brennan, and this morning you received a handout, and the handout's titled Harbor Seal Haulout. If you could find that, that would be great. Oh, actually, it's up. Look at that. So I'm just going to try to go through this quickly. Overly enthusiastic visitors at the Fitzgerald Marine Reserve tide pools often get too close to the harbor seals and bring dogs to the beach. Please go to the next slide. If you could kind of just keep moving through them, that'd be great. The seals feel that haulout. The seals flee the haulout area on the weekends and return on the weekdays. Over 2,000 people. Next slide, please. Visit the Fitzgerald Marine Reserve tide pools on busy weekends. Next slide. Pads are worn down in the reef due to heavy foot traffic. Next slide. Only one county employee is on duty on busy weekends. Improved coastal access needs to include responsible stewardship of the marine environment, marine habitat, wildlife, and invasive plant management. Visitors and docents can be found poking at marine life with hiking poles every weekend. Can we stay on this slide for a second? With such a large number of visitors, responsible stewardship is not possible with only one San Mateo County Ranger on duty at the Fitzgerald Marine Reserve. Next slide. The other concerns are drainage. Next slide, please. Next slide. Those are the pups back there if you want to see the, go back one. Okay, next slide. Next slide. Great. The new Fitzgerald Marine Reserve staircase is currently being undermined by stormwater runoff from an open drain pipe located next to the foundation of the stairs. The project was completed 4 months ago. The staircase ribbon cutting was on October 27th, 2010. The erosion problem has gotten progressively worse over the past 2 months. Next slide. Drainage was not adequately addressed when the Fitzgerald Marine Reserve staircase project was designed and built in 2010. Next slide. Next slide. Next slide. Okay, stop here for a second. You can see that San Mateo County's come up with some creative ways to deal with some of the drainage issues at the Fitzgerald Marine Reserve. They're using bags of, next slide please, of this stuff that's called Champion's Choice Selenium 90 Trace Mineral Salt to mitigate stormwater drainage into the Fitzgerald Marine Reserve. This is not a good material to have going into the water. It's not something that they should be using, and I'm hoping that something could be done to change that practice. I mean, we've been seeing these bags showing up for the last couple years. Thank you.
I don't know if any commissioners have any comments. I don't know that there's anything. Do we have any jurisdiction on this?
We can look into that. There may be a development authorization required to place the material. It's probably in the county's jurisdiction.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Catherine Slater Carter, and first I want to thank you for your vote on substantial issue on the trail. As Commissioner Chair Wan said, it's not an issue of whether we need the trail, it's how big it should be, and I'm glad the Coastal Commission did find substantial issue. An issue that will be coming before the Commission in regards to which will be substantial issue, is a home for developmentally disabled adults. It will be put in the tsunami zone on a wetland in an area prone to shaking. It's being heard of at the Board of Supervisors next week, but hopefully we can find a way to bring the tsunami issues into this, because it is truly in a tsunami zone. In regard to Sabrina's comments, I was at the Chula Vista Coastal Commission hearing and listened to the folks from, I believe it was Santa Monica, talking about the harbor seals on a public beach and how there was this big conflict between seals and the public's right to use the beach. I believe this is an issue that perhaps a coastal commission should see as a statewide issue, and perhaps look at some particular studies, maybe to arrive at some solutions. I'm sure this is not the only place that it's happening, but people are drawn to look at the wildlife and the habitat, but then it's a problem for the wildlife, and I have no solutions, but just think that it is a broader issue than just little groups of neighbors coming and complaining. And on the last point, San Mateo County, all of our streets essentially drain into the ocean. I've been trying to work with them to develop some other kinds of ways of improving the public works drainage in our community, but just recently they have once again been asphalting drainage areas so that it increases the runoff and increases the sedimentation into the ocean, into the marine reserve, and into the habitats. So it would be nice if we could find a way to, through coastal permit process, maybe get the county public works department to take seriously the fact that it should not be diverting all of the street runoff from the developing areas onto our sensitive beaches and habitats. Thank you very much.
Morning, Commissioners. My name is Cynthia Matthews, and I'm here to speak very briefly in favor of a couple of projects that are not currently before you, but will be soon. One is the Arana Gulch Master Plan, and the other is the La Bahia Hotel Project. I wanted to say that you necessarily, by the nature of your work, consider projects individually and in detail, but I want to just give the big picture of this community and this city's commitment to environmental protection. And the filter that I use personally is 16 years of experience on the Santa Cruz City Council. I'm a dedicated environmentalist. I've been a Sierra Club member since 1964, Audubon Society, Nature Conservancy, state parks, the whole deal. In my capacity on the City Council, I've served for about 15 years on the Conference and Visitors Council here in Santa Cruz. So I know the importance of people wanting to access the beach. I know that our primary market here is people from the urban areas of the San Francisco Bay Area and the Central Valley, people who don't have the benefit of living right across the street from the ocean, but for whom this is a really precious experience. I've also served for probably about 15 years on the Monterey Bay Sanctuary Advisory Task Force, a local countywide group, and I'm currently on the fundraising committee for the Sanctuary Advisory Center. That's just the context. So I wanted to describe very briefly this community's deep, long-time commitment to the principles of the Coastal Act and how those have been embodied in city policy. City donated the land for the Sanctuary Exploration Center. That's our prime real estate, right where everything converges at the beach. We're happy to do it, and we're partnering with NOAA and private fundraising. The city spends hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to maintain the municipal wharf, which we know, you've just talked about what a great resource that is. Westcliff Drive, 2.5 miles along Westcliff of bike and pedestrian access. We have voted to protect, as citizens, prevent stormwater pollution into our waterways. These are good projects. In different ways, Arana Gulch Master Plan and La Bahia give us resource protection, and they increase dramatically public access to the coastal resources. And this is what the Coastal Act is about. You will hear these in more detail, but I want you to understand that both as a city and a community, we want to work with coastal staff. You've talked about the burden on staff time. We want to resolve the issues. These are good projects that will have long-term benefits. We urge your careful consideration, your support, and if you have questions, please ask us. Thank you.
Are there any other public speakers? With that, I think we're going to end the meeting and run for our planes. Thank you very much. We'll see you all back.
See you in April in Santa Barbara.